This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. It is Wednesday, hump day. Clock keeps ticking towards the NHL expansion draft. And like sands through the hourglass, these are the days of the Blue Bombers' lives as training camp continues as well. U.S. Open starts tomorrow. Lots to get to. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. Gentlemen, how are we today? Did you survive the rain last night?
Well, I didn't even notice the rain. Well, I guess I heard the thunder as I was exfoliating and in the bathroom with my tweezers with the Daily War for 20 minutes or so. But yeah, ooh. I heard the lightning and thunder. Trey made comment of it, and then that was it, man. I didn't hear it or nothing for the rest of it till whenever I woke up.
It did not scare you in a fashion of which you tweezed or
no, I did. I dig nature like that, man. Trey and I normally stay up and we'll watch lightning.
Yeah, see that? I was just going to say, I don't get people that do that.
My dad used to always wake us up when we lived in apartments and on Wellams Lane, for instance, like up, and we'd just sit there, my sister and I with my pop, and just watch the lightning and learn to love it that way.
My old man tried to do the same thing with us and failed miserably. It's kind of like, I kind of look at it like the ocean. Like, I don't try and mess with the ocean. There's a lot of things in there that I don't know what's going on, so I just kind of I let the animals in there have their space, and I just chill out on land.
Trey used to be terrified of thunder and lightning, but after you get him to watch it and stuff and explain it to him and talk to him about weather and stuff, now he's super intrigued by it all. So a good save for instead of you who are still terrified of such things.
I didn't say terrified. I just don't like it.
Are you afraid of it?
I just don't like it.
Are you afraid of it?
You're scared. I was scared.
Get me out of here. Shut the door. I wrapped up the Netflix series Making a Murderer yesterday in an epic, as you guys said, you're gonna do this all. And I did. I did about six episodes.
People do that, huh? On Netflix? It's just like...
Well, it's just so intriguing.
Yeah.
And the thunder started rolling and the rain started pouring right as the injustices were being done. And I was like, this is creeping me out.
Did you catch up on the new information?
Yeah, I Googled, of course, Avery and where they're at. And if you haven't seen the series, I highly recommend it. It's about a gentleman who was put in jail wrongfully for 18 years. He gets out and then he's, well, I guess I can say my opinion, framed for another murder. And he's back in there, and his nephew's in there now, and you have to watch the series. It's phenomenally done. It's phenomenal, I should say. But yeah, I did Google where most of the main players are now, and it incensed me a little bit more.
Now it's the boyfriend.
There's creepy mustaches everywhere. And I actually thought that watching the series. When he was testifying, I'm like, this is your guy.
Yeah.
And if I know that, but I know it's a documentary and series and everything. So anyways, that's where the thunder rolled right by the old condo. And I was like, this is eerie. Justice and the lightning and everything else. Injustice. Lots to get to today, gentlemen. And I was we're going to hear from That's Hockey and where they feel the Jets should go in the expansion draft. We're going to get your opinions. We'll do that at 7 a.m. today here on the Big Show on TSN 1290. And whom specifically you would protect? Rory McGregor is upset as the U.S. Open gets going and is about to start tomorrow, I should say. We'll talk about that. And I was going to start with the no move and where you guys sit on it and whether you think it's a player's right after Dion Phaneuf announced that he will not be waving his no move to be exposed for the Vegas expansion draft. And he does want to stay in Ottawa. And at least concerning Vegas, will not be helping the team with the request, which they asked him to do. But I'm going to start with Mr. Puig from the LA Dodgers. Yasiel Puig, double bird to some fans behind home plate in Cleveland last night. I don't think he's played in Cleveland before. And it just started as we got closer to the start of the show. I'm like, what do you guys think of that? Like, we're going to talk about a player who's been given a no move and is right to actually do it or not and how the fan reaction might happen as the season starts. But where do you sit on that with a fan? Is it no matter what a fan says, he's paid that ticket or – and I don't know what was said in this case. But I'm just wondering, like, it wasn't even – in the heat of the moment. To me, it was clearly planned. home run, touch home plate, double bird, thought about it the whole trip around the bases, and feels like he's going to get fined and he'll pay it.
Yeah, I don't think – I've always been of the mindset, and I can't say that I haven't thought about it before when I was playing, you know, and not necessarily on the road, really. So, yeah, I have always been of the mindset that fans have the right to do whatever they want, say whatever they want, and you just have to deal with it as a player. I don't know that Puig – to me it wasn't – I doubt that he thought about it all the way around the bases, because I would think that if an athlete thought about it that long, you'd come to an understanding of how there's nothing positive that's going to come from it, and almost the quickness of it that he does after he rounds the bases, the way he just sort of flashes it, makes me think like he's almost doing it thinking it's not going to be on the front page of everything the next day. So it's never you never win stooping to the level. You have to maintain the high road as much as possible in these sort of things, and just come to a real profound understanding as an athlete that there is never a positive that comes out of doing something like this. Although, guys, the more the days, the weeks, the years go by, things of this nature where before they maybe 10, 20 years ago where they were like you'd get cut from a team for stuff like this, in the realm or the world of pro sports and marketing and all the rest of it, somehow this is becoming to make athletes bigger and more attractive to marketing or like branding and all the rest of that. I kind of think like we're right on the edge of that anyway, where outlandish stuff like this is making, like adding to legend instead of taking away from someone's career. We live in strange times.
When we saw during the NBA final, Matt Barnes gets into it with a Cavs season ticket holder, a really wealthy man who is personal friends with LeBron James and some other Cavs. He gets tossed. This thing last night, of course, a couple of weeks ago or a week ago, Joey Votto, I think it was a couple of weeks ago with the Reds, was on the on-deck circle and a guy's chirping at him and he's filming it. And he actually says to Joey, you know, I remember when you used to be good. And the guy turns and Joey Votto turns and says, I remember when you used to be skinny. And they get into it, and he said, see, the thing is you're recording this, and I have everything to lose, and you have nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. It seems like the trend is slowly going, because I agree, a fan pays, he can boo, he's got a ticket, he can be upset, he can do whatever he's allowed, or she is allowed to their opinion. There seems to be a swing coming back. And Yasiel Puig, although I admit, I don't know this guy, and he seems to have his issues with youth and being immature, seems to be so, doesn't care. Like, the whole trend I'm trying to say seems to be switching towards you are saying too much. And if you wouldn't say this to me, they're saying it. In a lot of ways, what you hear on Twitter is anonymous, where you see somebody, and I always say that, you know, if I have a problem with people on Twitter speaking to me like they wouldn't if I saw them in a restaurant. Now, that's what it is. We're on a show. I don't care.
Most people do.
But most people, like, you know, if you're going to say that to somebody's face or whatever is being said, can they not react just because they're the athlete?
Well, and I mean, getting in an athlete's head, isn't that part of the home field advantage too, though?
Trying to affect, as long as you
keep it somewhat in the lines, like as long as it's not racial or,
yep,
or, you know, anything that's clearly over the line. I mean, that's part of the deal of being an athlete and playing. And hey, maybe it's different if he does this in LA, and then things really start to unravel for him. But I mean, if you're an athlete, you just have to come to the realization of, I'm getting paid millions of dollars to do something. These people are paying to watch me go to my job. And then all of a sudden, the taunts and everything start to kind of lessen themselves a little bit in your mind. So I'm okay with fans basically going at guys for the most part, because, I mean, I wouldn't personally do it, and a lot of the times you kind of look like the a-hole when doing it, but, I mean, if you're there to watch your team win, and you can impact the other team negatively somehow, and if a player is dumb enough to fall for it, hey, go for it.
But I don't think that's the case here. Obviously, if they're, Puig was saying they were beacon before he goes up, hits a dinger, comes off, and
yeah,
it gives them the salute, right?
So well, I don't cost think them a very, couple extra.
I don't think very often that, regardless of what's said, that you're really truly getting the kitchen Maybe once in a blue moon you do. Like, I used to grab parts of my body if it, you know, and do it very, like if people were beaking at me at some other stadium, maybe, you know, grab my butt or some other part, and but be nonchalant about it. But the person involved with me coming would know that it was intended for them, and then there'd be some slight eruption. But you don't get this level of coverage either, right? Like, it is interesting, and he himself says, "Hey, I stoop to their level." I think every once in a while, and it's interesting because we haven't heard from him in a matter like this for a long time, right? For anything negative. But yeah, you've always got to be razor sharp. It's hard to do, but you have to teach yourself to be razor sharp like this in the public eye, because it doesn't matter if he's on the field with this or if he's just out in day-to-day life, out on the streets, right? You're going to have people coming at you, and you have to, no matter what is said and done around you, you have to operate at a different level.
And I totally get all that. I'm totally under the, you know, have a thick skin. This is what you do. Don't let them get to you, all that kind of stuff. But is there a line?
Well, like Wicks was saying, yeah, I think there are lines. And especially, like, there's a, you know, talking smack is one thing, but when you do veer off and things get racial or things get overly personal, then I think a line can be crossed. But even if that line is crossed, what is really an effective recourse for you as a person on the receiving end of that? Unless ultimately you want to – I remember when we played down in Birmingham during that U.S. expansion, and of course we had black guys on our team, and some of the racial taunts that were thrown to the black guys on our team there were outrageous.
Well, and that's what I mean. Like, so,
and guys were climbing – like there was a fence between us and the stands behind us, and some guys, myself included, were climbing the fence wanting to go – like they were horrible. It was amazing. So you get a some point in time where you feel like there's – like you have to take action, but ultimately you can't as an athlete, right? There's nothing you can do about people talking like
and
that.
And I totally understand that. But are you allowed to turn and say something? Are you allowed to give the double bird? Are you – like it? Are you – there has to be a point where although I – 99.9% of the time I side with a fan. You paid the ticket. You want to chirp. You go right ahead. That's just part of whether you're doing a sports show, whether you're doing you're an athlete, whatever. I get that. But is there a line? And when that line is crossed, are you allowed to double bird? Are you allowed to, like he said, stoop to their level? Like Joey Votto, like, takes a direct personal shot at a fan, and some fans go, well, that's not right because
you're
the athlete.
Well, I think that's okay, what he
and,
did. Right? He's not doing anything vulgar or anything like that. I think you can converse back and forth with a fan like that if they want to engage. 100%, I believe you can do that. But as the player, you can't be vulgar. You can't make vulgar actions, all those sorts of things. When you're asking, can you do it and stuff, you can do it. Like, Puig could do it. Puig's not going to get in a whole bunch of trouble. He'll get a little lighter in the pocket and all the rest of it. But this is another thing attached. Like, ultimately, yeah, you can do it. You got to pay a price for it. And then this picture of him with the double bird lives in infamy. So is that worth the trade? I don't know. Probably not.
He probably regrets it. I don't know if Joey Votto regrets his. I don't know.
Joey Votto shouldn't regret
it. Yeah,
and I don't even know if Puig should regret his. Like,
well, that's what I'm asking.
Like, I wouldn't do it, but, hey, it's funny. But if he does it again and again, then obviously it becomes an issue at that point. But if it's a one-time thing, you know, I don't know how much he's making, but whatever he gets fined is going to be basically a $20 fine for the most of us.
Yeah.
So I don't really have
You might do it, Wex. If someone was in your face enough or said the right thing, you might do it.
Well, especially after you get chirped and then launch one deep, then it's kind of like, I get that more so than if you struggle and then you come at them and then everybody gets into it at that point. But I mean, realistically, if you're the athlete and somebody you feel crosses the line, all you have to do is mention it to a manager, to an umpire, to someone, and the fan's going to get his ass kicked out, right? Like, That's usually the way it goes. If the athlete feels like he's being harassed to a point, don't you feel like you have the power to send him off? And he probably doesn't get to go back to the stadium anymore?
That's something I never, like, for me on the side, something I never thought was an option, that I could complain and have a fan tossed. That's an interesting thing to,
like Matt Barnes did in the NBA Finals. And it wasn't, you know, I don't care how much money this guy makes. He's a guy who, in the NBA Finals, you know, is high. He was shaking the security guard's hands on the way out. He's a longtime season ticket holder. They all know him, and he still got tossed. So it's just interesting to me, and I thought it's an interesting conversation. We'll open it on Boss Pizza Fan Line, too. Is there a line, or does athletes or do athletes have to sort of remain, no matter what's said and what's done, you know, professional and I guess not. I don't even want to use the word professional. I think if somebody is in your face, being vulgar, being racist, being whatever, you're allowed to say something, well, no matter what the role is.
The most basic of, you know, of human law, right? Yeah. But
yeah,
legal thing exactly. is different, right? But a natural state of human law, yeah, you should be able to take action.
It's an interesting discussion. We'll take a break and get into whether a player should wave his no move or not. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The iHeartRadio app is where you stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations. Check out the Perfect Four menu to customize your listening experience, your music, your stations, always free on the iHeartRadio app. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, 23 minutes past the hour on The Big Show. And yesterday, Dion Phaneuf said he will not waive his no-move clause after the Ottawa Senators asked him to, specifically for the Las Vegas Golden Knights expansion draft. So now the Senators have to come up with something else. We'll hear from That's Hockey a little bit later on in the program and their thoughts on this. But do you side with the player here? And the player's Dion Phaneuf, and it's four more years. It's $7 million. And do you side with why should he help the team? And how does this relationship go forward now that he said no? Or do you sort of...
Well, I definitely side with the player. I mean, the players, it's their inherent right with that. The no move or no trade clause here. I don't like those things. I can't stand them. It's amazing to me that in a league of guaranteed contracts that there's another chip that the players get like that for the GMs, and it's really quite remarkable when you look at some of the teams, how hampered they are in dealing with players and contracts going forward because they dish them out like cookies and milk sort of thing, it seems. But there's no question that they are a commodity, these things, and something that adds to a player's agreement and contract. But Dion Phaneuf's got every right. I was driving around yesterday wondering what would it feel like if a team came and asked you to do that, and if you say so, you get a feeling, general understanding of what they think of you and or of you and your contract anyway, and you say you make the decision no. But you're pulling in $7 million a year. And so it a little bit of a bruised, like, part of the relationship there. But ultimately, for him specifically, you've got four more years left at $7 million. And as each day goes by, I suppose the sting of being asked to remove your clauses here goes away. But do you really end up caring too much? I suppose you don't. You just have to have an understanding of the business part of the relationship and move forward, and you're still cashing your checks. It's a real weird thing, huh? To deal with as a player. But I would think after the initially being asked, you say no, and then it just whatever type of strain on the relationship would fade as each day goes by because they're still giving you money and you're still going to be playing for the team.
Well, and if you have a good relationship with the boys inside the room and your family likes the city, then,
you know, does he have a family?
I don't think so.
Does, right? Yeah.
I think he's still like with Alicia Cuthbert. But
he is married. They're married now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess technically that's a family in a way, however you want to term that. But if the wife likes it there, then and you like the guys in the room, like you really just fracture your relationship with management or vice versa, right?
Yeah.
So, hey, look, I don't know how you could not side with the players in this case, honestly, because they gave it to you.
Yeah.
No player forces a team to give them a no-movement clause. And I agree with Troy where I think these are things, if I had a say in it, one a team and that's it. One player on every team can get one and you can't offer any more than that because it's crazy. When you have guys like Kevin Bieksa and some of the players that are being forced to be kept by teams because of this expansion draft, because they have that no movement clause, I mean, it's beyond ridiculous at this point. And if there was a way they could, doubt they can go back at this point, but that's what I'd like to see, where you could limit it to one a team.
I totally agree with that, but like, if you're the Penguins and have Crosby and Malkin and can only give out one, and one is 2 or 3 years away from free agency, why would they sign and not test free agency? Or I like, there are the cases where I get it, but I'm 80% with you guys. I don't like them. I don't think they, but I side with the player. We'll get into much more of this and the Jets expansion draft itself. But up next, we'll talk some Blue Bombers and Rory McIlroy prior to the U.S. Open starting tomorrow. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN is proud to be a media sponsor of the 2017 Canada Summer Games from July 28th to August 13th, as all eyes will be on Winnipeg as thousands of athletes from across Canada come to compete in the country's largest multi-sport and cultural event for young athletes. It will include 16 sports and over 250 events. It will mark the 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games and will welcome over 20,000 visitors. And you can help paint the town red, yellow, and orange every Friday until July 21st. Wear your official 2017 Canada Summer Games clothing. Take a picture of yourself and share the photo using the handle at 2017 Canada Games and the hashtag Gear Up for a chance to win a Via Rail promotional travel credit. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for more information about game gear Fridays. And to stay up to date on event details, ticket offers, and more, visit 2017canadagames.ca or tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, 33 minutes past the hour on a Wednesday. Lots to talk about today. We're going to hear more about the Jets expansion draft, and we'll get my two co-hosts' thoughts on not only which way they should go, but which players specifically they will protect. And we'll do that in the Boss Pizza fan line as well. We'll hear more on the expansion draft and the waiving of contracts. And Laura Armstrong going to talk Blue Jays next hour as well. But gentlemen, Blue Bombers camp continues. They host the Edmonton Eskimos in their second preseason game tomorrow, which will be June 15th. And then they have a couple weeks off because they have the first week bye week. Some CFL teams will have played two games by the time the Bombers have played their first. Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on how he's handling the weird schedule at the start of this season.
Well, I think the most important thing, you certainly segment it, and the most important thing is making sure they're physically ready to play this game, this exhibition game, so that they can give and show everything they can and give themselves the best chance to, best opportunity to win the job. Beyond that, paring down the roster, that takes sort of that's the next step. So I don't necessarily think that far ahead in terms of giving them all the information, right? They know that the most important thing right now is this next set of meetings today and then dinner, you know? So we haven't been in this situation before. So, you know, we've got a plan that we think will work and be advantageous for us and put us in the best position, given a situation that we're not familiar with.
Does it help a team to not play, you know, facing a team that's already got a game under their belt? Nothing you can do about it. It is what it is, but
I don't think it helps. I think it would be very easy for the Bombers, just from a smoothness aspect, to be a little bit behind on July 1st when they go to Saskatchewan. So you think of the entirety of the situation. This is the first game, regular season game at Mosaic Field. It's going to be an absolute gong show there. Cameras will be there under the lights Saturday night. And Saskatchewan, with whatever flaws that they come into this season with, are going to have the one game under their belt. They will have some more level of routine and all the rest of it. And the Bombers, Matt Nichols is likely to play what, two quarters this game upcoming? Probably. And then the rest for 2 weeks. It's real hard to mimic game like precision during practice. You could try as hard as you can, but it wouldn't be surprising at all for me to see the Bombers come out of the gate slowly on July 1st. Hopefully it's not so much that you put yourself behind the eight ball and really have to play catch up the rest of the game. But I do understand that for sure in certain elements, as far as the smoothness of execution, that there'll probably be some level of stumble on July 1st.
It's one of my least favorite parts of the CFL that they force teams into having a bye week one. It makes no sense to me because you're specifically putting that team behind the eight ball right off the get-go. And then not only that, but then they have to travel in week two. So I don't understand that. I like what the NFL does, where I think you can't have a bye until either week three or week four, one of those two. The first 2 weeks, though, every single team plays. That should be an absolute no-brainer for the CFL to try and work the schedule so there's not these huge gaps in...
But I don't know, Wicks. I'm the furthest thing from a mathematician or stats guy, whoever does these schedules, right? But when you got nine teams and 18 weeks or 18 games, I wonder, does a team have to have somewhere is going to have the week one off? You know?
And does it.
Touche.
The unbalance. The NFL does it. The NFL goes 3 or 4 weeks before
but
a bye.
But the NFL's got a completely different situation with 32 teams and the games,
So nine teams offset set. I agree. I don't know how you have a bye week in the first week. I think if there's any way to fix that, even if it's after week one, I think that helps. I think it does put a team behind the eight ball. I think if you're going in to face a team that has already had a game, you know, the kinks you're working out, regardless of the first game and everything else that goes with the tweaking, and as weeks go on, you try to make your team better and execute better and everything else. I think it does put a team behind the eight ball. And I don't know if it's even better if you do have that week one bye that you have to start at home then or what. Like, to go on the road and to play a game against a team that's already had a game and implemented some of their... and had a chance to fix it. It would be nice that at least in week one, which, you know, obviously is impossible with an unbalanced league, to have everybody play.
And ultimately, to me, where it really gets you is later on in the season where your team could really use a bye to get healthy and get some rest. But because somebody's got to bite it that first week and it just happens to be our Bombers, now it's a little bit more demanding physically as well, right? Where you don't get that week, say, between game 7 and 8 sort of thing, where it can come in handy to actually heal and help your team. It puts a little bit more physical stress on your team as well.
And that's why I say even after week one, you could have some injuries that another week could help you assist you in what's going on. But I understand that that's what happens when, you know, you have this sort of unbalanced schedule. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers continue their training camp today and, of course, host the Edmonton Eskimos tomorrow. Later on in the show, we'll have a pair of tickets to give away for you to that preseason game against Edmonton, and then they'll wait to take on the Riders on Canada Day in Regina at the new Mosaic Stadium. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290, 39 minutes past the hour now. And the U.S. Open is going to start tomorrow at Erin Hills. And I know you guys were watching some videos early in the week talking about the rough and the fescue and just how bad it was. The United States Golf Association has now decided to cut that back a little bit. And Rory McIlroy is really not happy about it. Here's TSN's Bob Weeks and some comments from Rory on the decision to fix the rough.
Rory McIlroy comes into the U.S. Open after withdrawing from his two previous scheduled starts, although he declared himself ready and fit to go. Now, McIlroy was one of those who was a little disappointed to learn that the United States Golf Association was cutting back that long, nasty rough on four holes on Tuesday.
We have 60 yards from left line to right line. Like, you've got 156 of the best players in the world here. If we can't hit it within that avenue, you may as well pack your bags and go home. Like, I don't get... These are the widest fairways we've ever played in a U.S. Open. And even the first and second cut, it's another 10 yards on top of that. You know, so if you've got 50 or 60 yards to hit into and you're complaining about the fescue that's wider than that, I mean, I don't think that's an issue. I get that it's thick and whatever, but, I mean, it's a hazard. I mean, if you put red lines just right along that, people wouldn't complain. It's a hazard, and you would go and, you know, so... I don't know. It's the U.S. Open. It's supposed to be a tough test. And if guys can't put it in play within a 50-yard zone, I don't think they've got much to complain about. And if you look at how I've started the majors that I've won, you know, I've sort of led from the front. You know, it is imperative for me to get off to good starts, I feel like, and I haven't been able to do that. And I don't know if that's just me putting a little bit too much pressure on myself and not allowing myself to go out there and play in freewheel. But that's something I've tried to, you know, I've had a lot of time to think over the last few weeks and sort of figure out what I need to do to get back to winning majors and being in contention.
Now,
so there's Rory McIlroy talking about first that and then getting his game back and his preparation for the U.S. Open. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree. If what kind of loser, goofball, unathletic idiot can't land it on 50 yards of avenue between the rough?
Like, I took personal offense to those comments, Rory. Like real personal offense. Can't hit that.
And it's interesting, the USGA coming out and saying, yeah, it wasn't the video by Nah, and it wasn't a bunch of the complaints. They're saying it's for upcoming conditions that are going to have the fescue growing too wildly, and that's not what they're looking to capture with the fescue. Like, they don't want it completely impossible, if you hit your ball into it, impossible to find and or to hit out of it. That was the thing with the Nah video. It wasn't toss the ball and you can't see your ball. It was toss your ball in, and he literally took 2-3 swings at it and could not get it out of the fescue. So I guess that's what they're trying to get away from. They're trying to say that Nah's video had nothing to do with it. A little bit hard to believe. But nonetheless, it's going to be fun to watch. Right? If there is someone that gets that far off of their aiming points and starts to spray the ball a little bit, that fescue is outrageous.
Now, the only good thing is that it's been limited to 4 holes, I believe. So, you know, you're talking about a quarter of the course that was trimmed down a little bit. But I can't stand the fact that they did this, because you have about 98% of the tournaments on the PGA Tour that are designed to create birdies for the players, where you have perfect fairways, the first cut isn't a whole lot of damage, and it allows players to attack and attack and attack. But just once a year, these pros have to look like you, me, and the average Joe out there on the golf course. And a part of it is magical to watch in a way.
That's a fun part of watching the U.S. Open.
And to me, I like the U.S. Open that it's not the most talented golfer that wins. It's the toughest. And who can survive the grind? And who can be, you know, perfect in a different sort of way, where you just kind of avoid making big mistakes and you just kind of plod your way down the course. And it's a big reason why I think Phil Mickelson's never won it, where talent-wise, maybe you have Tiger, who's had more talent than him. But other than that, nobody over the past 20 years has more talent than Phil. But he's prone to kind of the big mistake, and that's what's cost him here. And I've always appreciated that about the U.S. Open. And the fact that they're trying to limit this survival battle, it is upsetting. And it's in direct correlation with Kevin Na's video, which is really too bad, because like Rory McIlroy points out there, you know, it's kind of there for a reason, to punish you if you can hit the fairway if you're a pro golfer, because you should be punished. If you can hit those wide fairways as a PGA professional, then you know what? You shouldn't be able to find your ball, and you shouldn't be able to get it out of there in one whack.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. What do you guys think of pro golfers or anybody taking a video like this and sort of bashing, you know, what's going on?
Well, this isn't the first time golfers have complained about the setup.
That's what
of
I
US
mean.
Opens,
like,
right? Like, you've had guys quit the tournament, coming off the green. I think it was John Daly, guys that just pick up their ball and walk off of greens because things are so unreasonable. So
that's,
I think,
my
it's
question.
Cool.
Like, what would you do if a hockey player sat down and said, look at these boards here in Boston, and shot a video and said, this is ridiculous, and this is ridiculous, and that's no good, and this is no good? Or a football player going, you know, look at this helmet. This helmet, da-da-da-da-da. Like, the whole idea of shooting a video, I don't know, like,
I don't think that because of their opponent is the golf course, and the golf course is prepped by the PGA and the governing body, I think it's a little bit different relationship in a lot of ways, and I don't have a problem with it. How many people watched that video with Kevin Na and just are in awe? And anyone that has golfed has some level of understanding of the difficulty of the game and then how the conditions come into play. The more we can see that as fans of the game with what these guys, like some of the undulation and the greens and all the rest, I find it fascinating. I want to know as much as I can about the remarkable conditions that these guys are playing on so that I can understand more, even more so, the separation that is monstrous that exists between myself and the guys that I watch on Sundays. I like it a lot.
I like the Kavanaugh video for two reasons. One, how Troy said you get to get an understanding of what they're going through. And two, I can put Kavanaugh last place on my betting list for the U.S. Open. Because if a week before the U.S. Open, you're complaining about the lies and the conditions, you are so already beat, my friend. It is finished. He's like, he has no chance of beating the U.S. Open. So I kind of like that twofold there. But I mean, the one I think you were referring to was the greens a few years ago where, yeah, one of the players, or Bob Weeks, I can't remember who, dropped the ball on the green, like just from a standstill, and the ball rolled 80 feet off the green. Like, when it becomes unplayable to that extent, then I think it becomes an issue. But when Rory McIlroy kind of outlines what they're dealing with, 50, 60 yards, like if it was a 20-yard fairway and immediately outside is 10-foot fescue, then sure, we have a little bit of unplayable conditions.
Is that a direct shot at Na? Like, hit the fairway, dude. Or is that just simply going, what are we doing here, and why are we doing this?
It's a bit of a direct shot. The thing, ultimate thing about golf here, boys, to me, is that even if the conditions are knocking on the door of unplayable, every single guy and girl are on the same course. Yeah. Right, so it's all relative in that sense.
Yeah.
So no matter what the conditions are, everyone's dealing with the exact same thing.
We'll get into the U.S. Open much more and ask your thoughts on this on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, but we'll get into it much more tomorrow prior to the U.S. Open getting underway. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
And we here at TSN 1290 are proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team celebrities, September 22nd and 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and you could have heard the Jays game last night right here on TSN 1290. You can hear the Jays and Tampa Bay Rays tonight right here at 6 o'clock on TSN 1290, but you may not have wanted to hear what was going on in last night's game. Marco Estrada gave up 12 hits and 6 earned runs in just 3 1/3 innings as the Tampa Bay Rays pounded the Toronto Blue Jays 8-1 last night. The Jays just can't get to 500. They're 31-33 and now 8 games back of the Yankees once again.
The Jays can't handle Tampa Bay. I heard their all-time record against them, of all the teams in Major League Baseball, the Jays hold the worst record against the Tampa Bay Rays. They just always seem to take them down and shake them down when they have the opportunity. And Estrada, we talked to Scott Mitchell last week about Estrada, who had two rough goes, and asked him if there's any reason to be concerned. Well, now in his last 12.2 innings pitched over his last three starts this month, he's allowed 28 hits, has an ERA of 12.08. The opponent's batting average, .452, like just ripping them apart. So it's just after what was a decent start with a 3.15 ERA in April and May, which was 11 starts. So you wonder with Estrada going forward, how much more struggle is there? And the Jays truly seem allergic to Mount 500.
Yeah, that's a similar story we've heard here in this city before.
Isn't it?
with Estrada, I believe he had similar struggles last year and kind of turned the corner once summer continued to push through. So I wouldn't hit the panic button just yet, especially for a guy like him where if he's missing his spots, he is going to get leveled. That's just kind of the nature of his style of pitching. He's not going to blow you. He's not going to be able to throw the heat past you when he's struggling. It's just he's got to be basically picture perfect on the corners and with his speed and pitch changes, and when he's not, you kind of see what happens. But it is frustrating watching the Jays, and you think they turn the corner here and they lose. Oh, they'll turn the corner here and they drop two in a row. So at some point they are going to have to string together, even though they have a little bit, another 5 or 6 game win streak to get it back together, because the Yankees sure don't look like they're slowing down. Boston's Boston, and now Tampa Bay all of a sudden. I mean, if you drop another one to them here, you're four games back, and Tampa Bay will have a couple games in hand. So they got to pick it up super, super quickly.
How big is this season for Justin Smoke at age 30? Did you guys? I didn't expect him to be a regular in the lineup, even though they needed a first baseman. And I didn't know. I thought Steve Pierce was probably going to get most of the starts at first base. What an outstanding season so far, hitting .299.
I wish I could remember. I was speaking to someone this weekend who was just in love with Smoke this year. Like, it's just incredible how he's drinking the Kool-Aid and thinking it's the greatest resurgence or eruption ever here for Smoke. It's pretty mind-blowing stuff. It's so cool when you see one of the old guys pull something like this off, and you just wonder how long the heater can last.
Yeah, and it was interesting hearing the games in Seattle on the weekend where he came from after a trade. Was there 4 or 5 years, and just, you know, the thoughts on him when the Blue Jays acquired him on the waivers and what he's doing this year as a 30-year-old. We'll take a break here on the Big Show. When we come back, Jets expansion draft. What and whom would you protect on the Big Show, TSN 1290?
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on the Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star. And we could be featuring them soon. The Royal Sports Power Hour here on the Big Show. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on TSN 1290. We're going to talk some Jays at the bottom of the hour. NHL news and notes still to come. And, of course, we'll talk more expansion draft and no waiver contracts or no wave moves, all that kind of stuff. Just digging the jam. That's hockey with Gino Retta and Dave Poulin and Jamie McLennan discussed what the Jets should do in the expansion draft yesterday.
Teams can protect 7 forwards, 3D, and a goaltender, or 8 players and 1 goaltender. Looks like the Winnipeg Jets are going to go the 8-1 route to protect their D, but then that exposes them up front, though.
It does, but their wealth is at forward with young forwards, and they've got to find a way to get some of these kids in the lineup. So you look at it, and they may lose Armia, they may lose Matthew Perreault, they may lose Andrew Kopp, but that's a pretty good group they're protecting. Their wealth, though, is Kyle Connor, it's Jack Roslovic, it's Nick Batan. They have such a group of talented young forwards coming that I think this is the route they have to go. They have to protect those 4D and keep things in line there. Once again, they've drafted very well at the forward position, and it will come to bear now.
Do I even risk asking the former goalie what the number one priority for the Winnipeg Jets should be in the offseason?
Well, it is helping Connor Hellebuck get to that next level. So they need to bring in a goaltender, a veteran goaltender that can help Hellebuck on certain nights where maybe he doesn't have it, where you want him to play 55 or 60 games. Everyone in Winnipeg saying you got to bring in a goaltender. Well, you may have a goaltender there that can get to that next level, but just like Pooley, you're talking about these young forwards and giving them an opportunity. Hellebuck was handed the keys to the car last year. Yeah, he hit the ditch a few times. Absolutely. Can he get it back on the rails? Well, he can get it back on the rails, but you have to give him somebody that he can work with, a veteran guy that can help bridge those nights where maybe 3 games in 4 nights, he's struggling a little bit. So I'm not even going to venture to guess, but if you can get a guy like Fleury or a guy like Steve Mason and sign him, that's guys that can eat some of those minutes up and be a good mentor for Hellebuck.
That's Jamie McLennan and, of course, Dave Poulin and Gino Retta from That's Hockey yesterday on what the Jets should do in the expansion draft. Is it going to be 8-1? Is it going to be 7-3-1? And whom are you protecting, gentlemen?
I'm sticking with 7-3-1, protecting Scheifele, Wheeler, Little, Perreault, Lowry, Ehlers, Armia, Trouba, Myers, and Byfuglien. I get Enstrom to lift his no move clause, and I work out a deal with George, and we've whatever pick, whatever reasonable pick, send a reasonable pick their way to not touch Toby, and that's what I do.
And what if Toby says no?
Toby's going to say yes.
I would also go 7-3-1 and do the Enstrom wave is no move and kind of hope for the best there. If you're asking what we're going to do and then say if he doesn't wave, then that scenario kind of goes out the window, right?
Yeah, I guess we should say, do you think he'll wave? I don't think he's waving it. So I guess whatever you guys feel, if you feel he will wave it, then what you guys think?
I think so. Just because of the nature of the comments we heard yesterday from Enstrom's camp about how there's kind of a cone of silence being thrown up from both sides there, where if Enstrom wanted to stay here and didn't want to waive it, wouldn't they have just come out and said it? Similar to what we heard from Dion Phaneuf yesterday. Like there'd be no harm in doing that from the Enstrom side if that's what they did and that's what they were comfortable in doing. So I just kind of feel like they asked and Enstrom said, fine, okay. Now, whether he goes to Vegas or a different team, I'm not totally sure of that, but I think that they do want to go that route because I think the Jets want to keep both Lowry and Perreault. I don't think they want to risk losing either one of those guys. So I think they go the 7-3-1 route and you're able to keep both of those forwards. And then when it comes to protecting who's left, I'd lean towards Armia and Dano, although I don't think that's the way the Jets would go. I think they would pick Kopp over Dano.
Sean Reynolds reported yesterday, Toby Enstrom's camp will neither confirm nor deny if he was asked to waive his no-move clause, want that info to be released by the team. Enstrom wants to play this season in Winnipeg, asked if he would reject requests to waive his no-move clause. His camp again said Jets will release that info. I think he said no.
Okay.
So that if you think that, why didn't they come out and say it?
Well, because look at the Phaneuf and fiasco. Now you've got a player who's not going to help the team. I just think that's the Jets' way. The Jets aren't going to release that information.
I just meant why Enstrom's camp wouldn't release it, because Phaneuf's did.
Because I think that puts the emphasis on Enstrom for not helping the organization. I think that's bad PR for the individual player.
Well, it's coming one way or the other. It's coming either on, what is it, Sunday, right? Or
well, no, because if the team releases 4-4-1... they're not going to sit down and said he said no. They're just going to protect the put out the list, and nobody's any the wiser. We can speculate.
Well, they'll be asked. They'll be asked to. Maybe they keep it quiet.
Like I think that's the thing. I think they're going to come out 4-4-1. I think he said no, and this is just I have no insight other than, you know, I think that it would, and we'll find out when they put out the list. But I think they put out the list, and they are going to be asked if he waived, and they're going to say we're not going to comment on specifics, like they always do.
Well, then you can connect the dots, right?
Yeah, I guess, for sure. So you're going, he did say yes, and they'll go 7-3-1. Do you think he gets picked up?
I would think so. I would have to think so. I mean, although if it is Marco Dano, like if the Jets' route is to keep Kopp and Armia as the 6th and 7th forwards, then you do have a bit of a decision if you're Vegas in that regard, because you have a player in Marco Dano who's 22 years old and has pretty good underlying numbers, right? And maybe if you put him in a top 6 scoring role, maybe you get a bit of a diamond in the rough. So I don't know. I would probably lean towards them taking Enstrom over Dano, I think, just because of the salary and the fact that Enstrom would play in the top 4 for them.
Yeah.
But I can't say for certain. I'd probably put it maybe 60-40, Enstrom over Dano.
I agree that there's a good chance he doesn't get picked just because of some of the defensemen that are going to be out there. And with his age and taking into consideration that he's only got 1 year left. Like, his age is a negative. 1 year left on his contract is a negative. Diminishing production is a negative, and there's a number of defensemen. When you look at some of the guys, and like you look at Craig Button's projected team, and you look for the expansion draft, or the mock team for Vegas, and you look at a number of the others who are making some of these mock teams. It's you look at it and you wonder whether or not ultimately they will take Toby or not. It's very interesting.
I
certainly not a slam dunk.
I think his 1 year left is attractive. I don't think it's a hindrance. I think they like that fact, building this expansion team. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Scott Cullen of TSN was on the warm-up yesterday with Darren Bomy and Michael Remus, and he said he thinks, and this is his feeling on what they should do, they should take 12 to 13 defensemen in this expansion draft and then start wheeling and dealing, much like the thought about goaltenders are. He thinks they should take 12 to 13 defensemen. And if that's the philosophy, I think for sure he gets taken. And then they sit there with their, say they take 12 D-men, then they sit there with their 12 and go, who wants what? And if Toby's left with them at 1 year at $6 million, fine. And if he's dealt somewhere, depending on what other teams want. And if other teams want a Toby Enstrom, then they'll deal him. And if not, he'll be on that roster. What do you think, Wes? Do you think he did waive and they'll go 7-3-1, you said?
Yeah, I've said 7-3-1 all along. I think even if he didn't waive and it's Tyler Myers who's on the outside there, I think that I don't think we're just going to see these clear-cut 8-1, 7-3-1s, and that's that. I think the GMs are going to be very imaginative in trading picks. Like, for instance, if you go 7-3-1 and it's it's Tyler Myers that's on the outside, you got to strike a deal with picks with Vegas and maybe a prospect so that they don't touch Myers. And I think that would be completely worth it to send a prospect, to send a pick to Vegas to not touch Myers. So regardless of how they do it, I think it's going to be 7-3-1. And somehow, some way, Cheveldayoff will have picks or prospects going to Vegas so that they don't touch whichever of the top 4D are going to be exposed. I think that's ultimately the way it ends up.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. We're discussing what we feel the Jets will do with the expansion list that comes out. We'll open the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 a.m. and let you weigh in as well. This is just my gut feeling. I think Toby Enstrom said no to waiving the no move. I think they go 8-1. And then if they go that way, the debate of Lowry or Perreault comes up again, like it did months ago. And I think they go Shifley, Wheeler, Little. I think they go Lowry. I think they go Trouba, Enstrom, Bufflin, Myers, and Hellebuck. And I think that that's the way it goes. I think they would like to go 7-3-1. I don't know. For whatever reason, I have a feeling Toby wants to stay here. I think he wants to play out his contract. And I think he wants to play in Winnipeg. And I think he said no if they did ask him again. Interesting, though. A little bit about this. Like I said, Scott Cullen on TSN 1290 yesterday said they think they go 12, 13 defensemen. How do you think Vegas goes about this? There's so many theories out there about, like, whether they go heavy D-men and wheel and deal, whether they go heavy goalies and wheel and deal. Some people think they're going to sign a goalie or two instead of grabbing maybe five of them. What do you think Vegas does in philosophy-wise?
Well, when you're talking philosophy, like, do I think they're going to construct some sort of a heavy team, a la the Kings and the Blues a couple years back? No. I think that they go and they grab, they want to be competitive out of the gate. They go and grab as much skill and speed as possible. And I think that it's going to be real interesting to see what they do from that UFA, RFA perspective. What is it, 48 hours before things open up, right? Like, that could be get really juicy here for Vegas. I think people are really, and I thought Scott Cullen did yesterday, really underestimating what Vegas is going to, the level that this team is going to play at. They're going to be so dense with depth, much more so than I think the average team in the NHL. And with Gallant's sort of approach to playing the game, I think they're going to be real tight, real difficult to play against, and much more successful than people are giving them credit for.
Yeah, I think it's still so tough to say philosophy-wise what they're going to do, because not only are teams making moves with Vegas, but other teams are going to make moves with other teams so that they can help each other escape the expansion draft. But I think the one thing for sure is the few teams that we know are in the biggest trouble, the Columbuses, Anaheim, Chicago, probably Minnesota as well, maybe the Islanders. I think Vegas will take full advantage of those opportunities and get very high picks. I think they're going to get a first out of Columbus. There was the Bieksa rumor yesterday that he's being traded to Vegas. Wouldn't be surprised if they were able to get a first out of Anaheim. I think the few situations where they have those desperate clubs, they're going to milk out some really, really high draft picks to give them a couple more assets to maneuver with at the draft. And wouldn't surprise me at all to see them maybe even after the expansion draft, if they pick up two or three first-round picks, maybe you take two guys in the first round and then you take that other pick and grab an NHL player off another team's roster. But I think the one thing that I could kind of see for sure is the four or five teams in big trouble, that Vegas doesn't really give them a life raft, per se, to help them out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, again, it's such a great discussion because I literally have my own thoughts and philosophies on this, and then I just really don't know. I don't know if they go heavy D, heavy goalie, forwards, and the deals are going to be real interesting to me as well. But there you go. Two of us think 7-3-1. I went 8 skaters and Connor Hellebuck. And we'll find out what you think on the Boss Pizza fan line at 780-1290 at 9 o'clock. Lots more discussion to come on that. We'll talk more expansion draft when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290, United Firefighters of Winnipeg present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090. Standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, United Firefighters of Winnipeg will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaelia, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Michaelia and Caring for Kids, visit tsn1290.ca. Caring for Kids is presented by United Firefighters of Winnipeg and TSN 1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Royal Sports Power Hour. Continuing the expansion talk, of course, Dion Phaneuf was asked to waive his no move in Ottawa. And he said no, he will not be waving. So that presents a different scenario for the Senators. Once again, back to That's Hockey on TSN yesterday. Gino Retta and Dave Poulin on Phaneuf's right to not waive his no-move clause.
Poulin, well, Dave, you've been there on the management side, sitting across the table from a player and or his agent, and they work in at the last minute a no-movement clause. Now you've given it to them. You've got to live by the sword and die by the sword. Do you have any problem at all with Dion Phaneuf saying no to waiving his no-move clause?
I have absolutely no issue with it at all, Gino. It's well within his right to do it. What it really says is how happy he is in Ottawa. He's developed into a really key player for them. He's happy in his role. He's happy with his team. He likes the city. He doesn't want to go anywhere. That's the bottom line. He simply doesn't want to leave. So how can you argue with having a player who wants to be a part of your organization?
All right, then. So what do you do if you're the Ottawa Senators management team led by Pierre Dorion? Who do you protect? Who do you expose?
Well, Carlson's obvious. You're also going to protect Dion now with the no move. And the third piece for me is Cody Ceci. He's a young player. He's talented. He's grown into a defensive role. I still think there's an offensive upside. What is that risk now? You could lose Mark Mathot. You could lose Mark Borowiecki. I think you're more likely to lose one of the young kids, Frederick Claesson or Chris Weidman. They're talented. They're a little bit different, but Claesson really, really came on in the playoffs. Physical, he was up in the play. I think he's one out of the corner of their eye. They're really hoping they don't lose.
All right, the Sens' plan A was to get Dion to waive. That's not going to happen. Now they have until Saturday at 5 o'clock Eastern, 2 Pacific, to come up with a plan B.
How does this play out in Ottawa if you're Dion Phaneuf going back to the training camp? And what if Dion Phaneuf has an awful season next year? Does this come back to haunt him?
What do you mean? What if?
Well, people in Ottawa are still remembering his decent play in the playoffs.
You know, if you're Dion Phaneuf and if you are entrenched in the community in Ottawa and if he's in a relationship and the other half is happy there and doesn't want to go, and the thing is with these contracts, man, is that he is the bottom line is that he is guaranteed $7 million for the next 4 years in Ottawa, and regardless of how the man plays, they're on the hook for that. I wonder at some point in time as an athlete, and I try and, you know, it's hard not to sort of have a negative take on Dion Phaneuf sometimes, with just with how what he did in Toronto you know, you saw him with some fantastic energy in Ottawa. So it looks like he still has fun playing the game to some degree. But also you have to wonder, like, at some point, do you just like, how much does he care about the relationship part of it when you know you got $7 million coming to you for the next 4 years if you're happy where you're living? And if and like you were saying, if he gets along with his teammates and all the rest of it, I don't know how much you would care about the stress if that's what it is that might exist with the organization and having your feelings hurt knowing that they'd love to get rid of some combination of you and your contract. I don't know if you ultimately care getting that much money.
No. Well, hey, $7 mil definitely eases the pain a little bit. It should, right? Because if you're spending like how much of the time away from the rink and you're happy with your life there, I mean, it's not too hard to imagine a guy living out the rest of his contract and not having a whole lot of stress regarding it. So, I mean, like if you're a fan of the Sens, don't be mad at FNUF. He's doing what any of us would do in that exact situation if we were happy in Ottawa. So, all the blame should be on management at this point.
So is it the same for Toby? Like if Toby says, I've been here, I love it here, I don't want to go, I'll be a UFA in 1 year, so why am I going to move now and then potentially in a year? I don't want to wave, and I'm going to be happy here.
I don't know how you could be mad at any athlete. Like how in the world can you be mad at any athlete for taking advantage of something that exists and was negotiated in their contract? I don't understand the spirit of the question. How could you possibly be upset at them?
And think how silly of it as a fan you would have to look at it as being upset at somebody that wants to stay and play in your city. Like if you're upset about somebody who wants to live where you live and enjoys it, well, where are your priorities at?
Well, you'd be up if you're a fan of the team, though, Wicks. You're upset if you feel them moving out would help your team.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you could understand on a personal level, though, that
well, see, like,
you're going to actually be mad at another person for wanting to live where you live because he enjoys the place.
If you don't want them there, yeah.
Then you are one petty SOB.
Say this team loses Myers, or say this team loses Perreault.
Don't blame Enstrom for it.
No, I understand that. I'm with you.
Yeah.
I just think that there are some fans that are going to go, man, if Toby only would have just done this. And it'll be interesting. We'll talk more about this in the Boss Pizza fan line up next. We'll talk Jays on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Don't forget to pick up your official TSN 1290 discount golf card today. Hit the greens throughout the summer with great two-for-one deals at a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including Granite Hills, Selkirk Golf and Country Club, The Meadows Golf and Country Club, Scottswood Links Golf Course, Kingswood Golf and Country Club, and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, just to name a few. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card and for a complete list of participating courses, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and this segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center. And we're going to talk some Blue Jays now with Miss Laura Armstrong from the Toronto Star. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for joining us. And we were just debating a little bit earlier in the show about the struggle to get to 500, and it continued last night.
Yeah, for sure. So last night was the sixth time that the Blue Jays have had the chance to get to 500 and the sixth time that they have failed to do so. Last night it was a 8-1 loss against the Rays, which was not a great start to what is supposed to be sort of an easier part of their schedule over the next couple series, because they play the Rays and the Chicago White Sox at home, and then they go on the road against the Royals and the Texas Rangers before then meeting up with Baltimore, New York, and Boston. So that's going to be a tough, I think, 9 or 13 games. Last night was a night where they just can't get to 500. It's definitely something that they're well aware of. They know that they're getting close to that mark, but they're not getting to it. Gibbons said last night that, they hope to get to it sooner or later. If they want to do anything this season, they have to. But it's just not coming for them.
It must be real interesting witnessing this whole thing for Justin Smoak. It's quite a heater he's on.
Yeah, for sure. He's he said that he just you know, is feeling more comfortable at the plate. I think a lot of that comes with the fact that he's playing regularly. You know, we were in Seattle on the weekend, and I think he hit his 18th homer of the year. His career best is 20, and that I think took him 131 games to get to. So he's on fire right now, and it comes down to I think a lot of mental preparation for him. He said at the start of the season that, you know, he tends to, when I spoke to him in spring training, he said he tends to overthink a lot of things at the plate. You know, this is a guy who had a lot of, you know, a lot of potential when he was drafted, and has never quite lived up to it. And it was funny when we were in Seattle on the weekend, you know, there was a number of people around Safeco Field who were saying, you know, this is the Justin Smoke that we had hoped we would see when he was younger. A lot of people asking for him back. So I think that he's sort of finally living up to the potential. The thing now is for him and for everybody is to see if he can maintain that, which is easier said than done considering the pace that he's on right now.
What is the extent of Devin Travis's injury? And we all talked about it and saw how emotional he was about announcing it. Now it seems it's going to be longer.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think that Devin Travis, you know, when we spoke to him in Oakland last week, he certainly was very emotional. He was not really interested in talking about how long he was going to be out for, just simply because, you know, it had been 2 hours since he'd found out that this wasn't, once again, an issue of bone bruise with cartilage inflammation. Devin said at the time that the bone bruise wasn't as bad. Yesterday he had a procedure to sort of clean up the cartilage problem in New York, and the indication from the club is that the cartilage damage wasn't as bad as the last time he suffered. You know, they're not really putting a timeline on it. We know that it took him 5 months to recover last time from a similar injury. He said that, you know, the pain is similar. That being said, if the bone bruise is better and the cartilage is better, then, you know, maybe the recovery time could be shorter. You know, Gibbons has said many times that it's going to be a while. I would say, you know, he was asked directly last week or yesterday if it was going to be weeks or if it was going to be months. I would err on the side of months because, you know, that's precedent. It took him months back last time. Nobody's called it a season for Devin Travis by any stretch of the imagination yet. And I don't think that the club will, but I certainly think it's going to be, you know, I wouldn't expect Devin Travis to be back, you know, in the next little while. You know, you look at a calf strain that Josh Donaldson had that kept him out for a month. I think that you're going to see that's going to be far more prolonged for Travis.
Please touch on the quality starts from the rotation as of late for the Blue Jays, and then also the recent struggle of Marco Estrada.
Yeah, so I mean, this is a talking point over the weekend. We got three quality starts out of Marcus Stroman, Joe Biagini, and Jay Happ on weekend against the Mariners. And if you're looking at, you know, the Tampa Bay Rays series so far this season, just because this is the team that, you know, the Jays are playing right now. I think that there's only been three quality starts from Jays pitchers in that series so far. There's been 10 games between the clubs. And on the other side, I think that the Rays have had 8 quality starts in 10 games. So that sort of exemplifies the issues that the Jays starting rotation has had so far this year. You know, it's not just the fact that you've had Matt Latos, Mike Bolsinger, Casey Lawrence come in because of the injuries to Happ, to Liriano, to Aaron Sanchez. It's that, you know, even, you know, Marcus Stroman has had nights where he's come in and had to leave the game early. Same with Marco Estrada. We've seen him lose 3 games back-to-back now. And yesterday he gave up a career-high 12 hits. It's definitely been a problem, and I know that coming into this series, the Jays were hoping that would turn around after the good starts from Happ, from Biagini, from Stroman over the weekend. And it certainly didn't last night with Estrada giving up that career high 12 pitches. He said last night that, you know, he knows what the issue is, but he, you know, he's just feeling like he's in a funk right now. How he gets out of that, I'm not sure, but I do know that he is not a guy that's going to be pulled from the lineup anytime soon. You know, Gibbons said that he's going to be in the lineup every 5 days. He's a mainstay in that rotation and has been for the last few years. And they're not going to, you know, jump the gun and suddenly pull Marco Estrada. They're going to give him the time to figure it out, and they're going to expect that he will. One good thing that we did see last night is that Marco Estrada has given up a ton of runs in the first inning, and yesterday he did manage to get out of it. So that I think would be something that Marco Estrada would take away from last night is a good thing. But yeah, the Jays, you know, as Gibbon said last night, the Jays have not yet managed to string together good defense, good offense, good pitching on a regular basis. That is probably why they keep struggling to reach this 500 mark, and they need that to happen if they're going to take advantage of, you know, the next little while, and then, you know, push through that difficult spell against all the AL East teams, and have any chance of getting to the playoffs.
We're talking Blue Jays with beat writer for the Toronto Star, Laura Armstrong, on the Big Show this morning, 41 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290. Laura, Josh Donaldson's back, and he's hitting .326 in 24 games, but he did miss a ton. I know Jose Bautista's played 64 games this year. Whose team is this when it comes to leadership and when Donaldson was gone for so long? And has it changed from Jose Bautista a little bit?
Yeah, I think, you know, from years in the past, it's changed. This certainly used to be like Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion team. And as of late, you know, you bring in the likes of Troy Tulowitzki, you bring in the likes of Josh Donaldson, you bring in even Russ Martin. And I think that, it's maybe evened out more in the sense that, you know, there's the shared responsibility more than falling on one or two players' shoulders. Certainly a lot of it falls on Josh Donaldson. Josh Donaldson is the guy that you want stepping up in crucial situations. And we saw it in extra innings in Oakland when he won that game. You know, he's put up a couple of game-winning home runs recently. And that's the guy that you want at the plate in those situations, which is definitely a change from the past when Bautista was that guy. I think it's a natural progression, you know. Bautista's getting older. It's not to say that you know, it's not still his team and he doesn't command a ton of respect in that clubhouse. It's just that, you know, it's sort of a passing of the baton, I would say. And you know, at some point in the season, Jose Bautista has been the guy. Through May, he was the guy. He and Devin Travis were the guys who were putting up the numbers that were keeping the Jays afloat while Josh Donaldson, Troy Tulowitzki were out. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, shared responsibility. And I think that sort of comes into the one of the Jays' strengths is the fact that they have a lot of experience in that clubhouse. So it's not just going to fall on one guy's shoulder to make sure that they get to where they want to be at the end of the season.
Laura, please tell us the story of the missed opportunity by the Blue Jays on Canadian boy, the big maple, James Paxton.
Yeah, so I wasn't on the beat at the time, but James Paxton was drafted by the Blue Jays. I believe it was in 2009, and there was some issues with Paul Beeston, who was then Jay's president, saying in the media that James Paxton, they weren't able to sign James Paxton. James Paxton was the only player out of, I think, the first 100 draft picks who went unsigned that year because they had to deal with his agent, not with James Paxton's family, which is a violation, as I understand it, of NCAA rules. So James Paxton went back to the University of Kentucky. He wanted to continue playing there. And, you know, after he didn't get the sort of money that he wanted or offer from the Jays, and Paul Beeston made mention of this in the media, and I guess eventually Paxton was deemed ineligible to play for the University of Kentucky in his senior year. So all of that to say that he ended up playing, I think, like some, you know, Texas League baseball for a year, waited it out until the 2010 draft, and then he was drafted by Seattle. So, yeah, it certainly wasn't great situation, I think, on either end. I talked to Paxton over the weekend, and he said, you know, that, you know, it's always special to be drafted by either way, by your first team, but he certainly, you know, his heart lies with Seattle, and they definitely are benefiting from him this year. He certainly had a rough start against the Jays on the weekend, but he's going through a breakout season here.
Jays and Rays will go at it again tonight in Toronto. We'll have the game for you starting at 6 on TSN 1290. Laura, we always appreciate your time. Great insight, and enjoy tonight's game.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks so much, Laura.
At Laura Army on Twitter is where you can follow her, and of course Toronto Star is where you can read her fine work. James Pax, that's an interesting story.
Yeah, really interesting.
How that all plays out, eh? Yeah. We'll take a break here on The Big Show and come back to the Royal Sports Power Hour. NHL news and notes next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our previous segment with Laura Armstrong talking Blue Jays was a presentation of the Olympic Building Center. Visit their design center today or online at olympicbuildingcenter.ca to start the project of your dreams today. TSN 1290 is excited for the 2017 Winnipeg Jets Draft Party presented by Sport Check Friday, June 23rd at Club Region Event Center. Hosts for the evening are defenseman Josh Morrissey and forwards Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic. All fans in attendance will receive an exclusive 2017 Draft Party giveaway dinner and beverage and the chance to win prizes valued at over $5,000. Tickets are on sale now. Visit winnipegjets.com or ticketmaster.ca. For more information, visit tsn1290.ca. NHL news and notes time. We talked yesterday about the Sabres coaching vacancy. It is the only one left to go. Some stuff around the league, gentlemen, I'm just going to throw at you and get your thoughts on it. And reports from TSN say that the Montreal Canadiens are not shopping Alex Galchenyuk, who was not in, I guess, one of the favorites of their head coach in Montreal this season. Are you surprised they're going to keep him?
No, I'm not surprised that they're going to keep him. And especially when you're talking about a guy that when you're desperate for help down the middle, and I know that the relationship is a little precarious right now, but there's a situation where I think you still have to work on that, right? You still got to appeal to him. Whatever the difficulties are there with the situation in Montreal, you've got to extract the upper echelon of what he can bring to the table. I think there's just too much there still. You're, like, to have the level of struggle last year, for instance, and the up and down the lineup, down to the fourth line in the playoff time, but still sniffing, you know, 44 points during the course of 61 games last year, and decent possession numbers, a guy that can play center for you, I think you got to stick with this and see this through.
And a guy that had 56 points as a 22-year-old, right? Yeah. So, I mean, to me, moving Galchenyuk, unless you're getting a clear-cut number one center back, would be foolish.
He's averaged 0.7 points per game the last 2 years.
Yeah, and if I'm Montreal, I kind of go all in on the kid. And I know that's probably not the route they're going to take here, but put him as your number one center. Give him an opportunity to flourish a little bit here. They've just been so hard on him and so unwilling to kind of massage and mature him into a guy that could be who they drafted, right? Like, they drafted him to be their number one center, yet they're, for whatever reason, they just kind of refuse to give him the opportunity, and especially when the options that they have are so limited. When you have guys like Philippe Deneau and, you know, a 35-year-old-ish Thomas Plekanec, like, I don't really get the handling of Galchenyuk by the Habs, and they've been doing this for a few years now.
Defenseman Yannick Weber of the Nashville Predators was set to be a UFA or unrestricted free agent, and the Nashville Predators announced a one-year deal worth $650K with the 28-year-old D-man. And the talk now is, and what do you do with that Predators defense, that they could leave exposed Colin Wilson, the Winnipegger, or even James Neal. Would you be all right with the Predators lineup if they lost James Neal in the expansion draft?
Well, the one thing that I certainly wouldn't do, and I hear brought up sometimes, is the possibility of floating a guy like Ellis out there, like maybe going 7-3-1 to protect their forwards and then losing Ryan Ellis. I think that's something approaching madness. They've got all kinds of cap space. And, yeah, if it is whichever, if they go 4-4 here, whoever it is that you end up losing, they've got enough money and cap room to go find a suitable replacement. So, absolutely, go 4-4, protect those top four D that you got, and go pick up what you need in the open market.
Yeah, Ryan Ellis might have the best value contract in the NHL, making $2.5 million for a guy that plays 22 to 25 minutes a night. So, I mean, it's not even a... You can't even think about letting any of your defensemen go because they're all Ekholm, Ellis, and Josi are all under such good contracts that you just be... It just makes no sense from that perspective.
The move of a madman. I can't believe it. It's been brought up a few times, too, to go 7-3-1 to protect... It's just kooky talk.
Yeah, so Neil Wilson, I don't know. Does it really matter? Maybe you move on from Colin Wilson because he hasn't really... Like, for all of James Neal's faults... He did still score 25 goals last year.
Yeah.
So, like, he's not the guy he was with Pittsburgh, but he's going to get you at least 20, somewhere in the 20 to 25 range, and you can kind of hide a winger like that in your lineup by sheltering him.
But 1 year left on the contract. All right, so that's another thing if you're Nashville looking at that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I really like James Neal, and I know... Production-wise, it hasn't been where he was with Pittsburgh, but I think he's a great power forward, and he's going to get 20 to 25 goals. I think he's more of a 25 to 30 goal guy. Well, 25, I'll say, given that's what he has. But I like James Neal as a forward. Matt Green looks to be bought out by the or will be bought out by the LA Kings. 34 years old, 6'3", 229. Only played in 26 games last year with the Kings. Does he play again? 34 years old, bought out. Has that got Vegas written on it? I don't even think... I think they'll have more quality D-men available to them than Matt Green.
Well, I'm not real sure what you would... Like, you're talking about a guy over the last 3 years averaging 0.09 points per game. And, like, what does he bring to the table at this point in time as a guy who's turning 35 in May? Yeah, I think he's done.
Yeah, I don't know why. Maybe like a training camp invite kind of thing. Maybe he rekindles some, but other than that, I mean, to give him a contract at this point would be kind of, just be pointless, really. Wouldn't make much sense.
And where does Ilya Kovalchuk? We've talked expansion draft. It's sort of like where he ends up, where he goes, what he gets for a deal has sort of been lost with everything else that's going on around the National Hockey League. Where does he end up? What's his value?
Value's still got to be considerable, you would think. Where he ends up, you have to lean towards a team that is on the cusp, at the very least, on the cusp or more than that. And that's about as definite as I can get in trying to figure out where he's going to end up.
I've heard Columbus is apparently big time in the running, and it would kind of make sense too with them moving that Clarkson contract out to fit that in there. So I mean, Columbus could be kind of a surprise team, but the fun destination would obviously be Toronto. and I'm being serious too. Like, if Toronto could make that work out and you add that big time sniper, whether you want to put him beside Matthews or Kadri, however you want to work it. I don't know, for
That'd
one or two years.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not saying, but I'm just saying it might be a fun little ditty for him to go out in Toronto.
All the Leaf haters out there are pissing at you. Yeah.
Well, and I'll leave it locally. Should the Jets be interested in this?
No.
No?
No. Where does he fit in here?
Yeah.
He's still productive.
I love Kovalchuk's game a lot, but I don't know if the fit is in Winnipeg either. I mean, we kind of have the Kovalchuk, right? Like, do you want to take opportunity away from Patrick Laine to give it to a Kovalchuk who might only be here for a year or two?
Laine, Wheeler on the both on, he just doesn't fit here.
And finally, Mary Lemieux, fully clothed in a Sidney Crosby's pool at the Stanley Cup party. Isn't that repeating history? Like, at his own party, didn't he end up in the pool fully clothed with the cup?
That I can't recall, but I did super dig the picture of the cup floating around in the pool with all the penguins. It just looks, that's an epic photo. Loved it.
I think that tradition was started with Lemieux. Like, I think when he won back as a player, the cup ended up in his pool at his mansion. And that's
I saw it attached to the saying, this is how Dents get in the Stanley Cup. And he showed everybody partying with the cup floating in the pool. Like, oh boy.
Ed Tate of BlueBombers.com joins us next to talk Blue Bombers training camp on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the Canadian Mental Health Association and Ride Don't Hide, Sunday, June 25th, starting at Vimy Ridge Park. Pit stops include the Manitoba Legislative Building and Canadian Museum for Human Rights. Funds raised will help support programs dedicated to youth mental health, workplace mental health, and family support initiatives. To learn more or to register, visit RideDon'tHide.com. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290. 4 minutes past the hour. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Lots to get to. We'll get back into the Jets expansion draft talk. Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey going to join us at the bottom of the hour, and we'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. Some interesting stuff to talk about. We'd love to get your opinion today, starting at 9 o'clock with a full hour of open phones. And even your thoughts on the Bombers so far as they prepare for their second preseason game and final one of the preseason schedule tomorrow night when they host the Edmonton Eskimos. And we have a pair of tickets to that game to give away. 780-1290. We'll give you a pair of tickets to the Eskimos Bombers preseason game tomorrow night at Investors Group Field. To talk Blue Bombers now, we welcome in Mr. Ed Tate of BlueBombers.com. How are you, sir?
Fantastic, fellas. How are you?
Very good. Escaped the rain yesterday at training camp.
Yeah, I don't know. I woke up in the middle of the night and we sure got pounded last night with it. I don't know. It was nasty to start training camp cold, but we've had a real good run, so I'm not missing it at all.
How excited are you with what you've seen here or the potential promise of TJ Thorpe?
Yeah, he's an interesting one, Troy. He's a guy that they've been kind of quietly, you know, gushing about for the last little while. He looked really good in the spring camp and again in mini camp, kind of tease you, and you don't know what to expect because he's not out there with veterans, and then he got hurt just the first or second day of training camp. But, boy, he's been really good in the last couple of days since he's been back from injury. He's working with the number one offense as a slot. He's set records in college as a kick returner, so that's an area of need, too. He's a guy that I think a lot of people, myself included, are excited to see what he could do tomorrow night because you look at their receiving core and there's a lot of the familiar names there, and they're good names, and Darvin Adams and Weston Dressler and Clarence Denmark and newcomer Kenny Stafford, but you'd like to see a new face kind of pop off the page a little bit, and he certainly has in the last couple of days.
Farhan Lodgy was on the program, I guess, last week with Rick Ralph, I believe, and he was talking about, or maybe in the afternoon here on TSN 1290, talking to Matt Nichols and saying if there's, you know, a weakness, not that they're weak, but compared to the other Western Conference teams or Western Division teams, receiver is a question mark for the Bombers. And he was saying Matt Nichols, as he would, was defending the receiving core, Ed, but was actually adamant about, you know, I know you don't maybe know many of these guys, but they're just as dynamic as other receiving cores in the West. How do you see this receiving core, and is there some dynamic play, big play potential out of them?
Oh, I think there is, Jim. I think that people look at some of the other receiving cores in the league, and they see an Adarius Bowman, they see what Ottawa did last year, the guys at Calgary trots out, and of course what BC has is just stacked. But you look at Winnipeg, and if you're just looking at the stats from last year, they're misleading because, I mean, Darvin Adams got hurt, but he would have been a 1,500-yard guy if he'd stayed healthy. I know that's a huge if. Weston Dressler had 1,000 yards in 14 games. Clarence Denmark, we all know what he did after they picked him up off the scrap heap. He set a career best in touchdowns last year. So there's good pieces there. maybe they don't grab you as the flashy guys because, you know, you think of Weston Dresser maybe on the back nine of his career, Denmark, same sort of thing. But, you know, Darvin Adams has got some home run capabilities there. And probably people look at the Canadian spot with Julian Fioragudino and think he's just okay. And there's no argument for me there, but he's serviceable. I think what happens is people just end up comparing this core to the rest of the league and maybe just look at the numbers and forget that this crew was hammered by injuries last year. And, you know, having said all that, maybe that's why a guy like Thorpe is such an interesting one to keep an eye on, because you do need a new face in there to push these other guys, and you need to see every year you need some sort of roster turnover, and you'd like to see some young guys emerge and maybe become starters down the road, and Thorpe would certainly fill that category.
Terrence Frederick gets released. Kevin Fogg back from injury. Your thoughts how things are coming along with the secondary?
It's an interesting one. I was a bit surprised by the release of Frederick because I thought he played okay last year, but he did get picked on Saturday night in Regina. He was covering Daron Carter, which is a tough matchup, but you're going to get that every week. But it says an awful lot about some of the other guys they've got in camp. Brandon Alexander, a guy I wrote about a couple of days ago, has been impressive. He was with Atlanta. His last tryout was with Atlanta. But there's, you know, there's other guys there, too, like Sammy Brown, Matt Smalley, Kevin Fogg, as you mentioned, Chris Greenwood, Robert Porter. There's still a lot of import guys here. And, you know, yesterday Bruce Johnson kind of pulled up lame near the end of practice. Mike O'Shea wouldn't say what the extent of his injury is. We'll probably find out in the next couple of days. But there's still some good pieces there. Chris Randall's had an outstanding camp. TJ Heath, Taylor Loeffler. So then you're looking at, depending on Johnson's injury, maybe one or two changes to the secondary. And with Kevin Fogg back, that's another familiar face. So there'll be some turnover there, Troy, but not a whole lot. And I think those guys will look an awful lot better if they could bring a little bit more heat up front. And we've seen and we've talked about how much changeover there's been on their D-line, too.
Ed Tate from BlueBombers.com talking training camp with us this morning on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 10 minutes past the hour. Ed, what do you know about Dominic Davis, and what do you like about him? What can you tell listeners about him?
Well, I would probably say I don't know a whole lot more than anybody else. I mean, I've seen him practice every day for a couple of years here now, and he looks, let's put it this way, the way he played Saturday night looked a lot different than the quarterback I remember from his only start at the end of 2015. He just looked so much more poised, so much more relaxed. It actually looked like he, if this makes any sense, he looked taller in the pocket because he just looked like he knew what he was doing and where to put the ball. And so this is the guy that this club has shown so much faith in and kind of anointed as their number two guy without a whole lot of, not much for a body of work. He didn't even throw a single pass last year, but he's really a smooth guy, and I've heard, now this is almost sacrilegious, but I've heard the comparison that he moves around the pocket like Damon Allen used to, and that's high praise. Now, of course, there's an awful lot of work to do to get to that category, but if he could even be close to what Damon Allen was, then the Bombers have got themselves a really good quarterback. He looked good Saturday in Regina, so did Dan LeFever. And I think the Bombers feel real comfortable about what they have behind Matt Nichols, and that's part of why Austin Apodaca, the young kind of prospect kid, was released on Monday.
It's going to be real interesting to see what comes of Dominic Davis. But would you agree at this point in time, and I've always kind of been a distant fan or thought he had some nice upside to him in Dan LeFever, seems like he shares a lot of the same type of qualities as Matt Nichols. And it sure seems like they got a real nice 1-2 punch, especially with the compliment to Paul LaPolice giving a system and structure for them to stay within. Are you excited about how solid they look at 1-2?
Yeah, I'm not sure yet, Troy, if they've even decided that it is LeFever that would be 2. He certainly had a really good game on Saturday in Regina. What I like about him is that he's just a different look. You've got Matt Nichols, who's more of your prototypical pocket passer. You've got Dominic Davis, who's the athletic type who can get outside the pocket and just looks so smooth. And LeFever is like a linebacker back there. I mean, you don't realize how big he is until you're standing beside him. And I'm not talking about he's 6'3", but he's 230 pounds. And when he gets outside the pocket, it looks like a linebacker running with the ball. And that's the kind of offense he ran in college. It's the kind of the skill set that's intrigued a lot of teams, both in the NFL and in the CFL. He's got a penchant for throwing interceptions, but you make a good point about maybe in a better system and not changing offensive coordinators year after year after year, he could find some comfort in Paul Apolice's offense. And there's something there. It's an interesting ad because in the offseason when they committed to Matt Nichols, they said so long to Kevin Glenn and then re-signed Dom Davis, a lot of people thought, oh, that's pretty thin. And it was almost like LeFevre was signed as an afterthought, but based on what we've seen through camp and last Saturday in Regina, it looks like a pretty shrewd pickup.
The schedule is what it is, and I know head coach Mike O'Shea yesterday was saying they have a plan for it, but there's going to be 2 weeks off and a bye week right at the start of the season. Some teams will have played two games before the Bombers will see any action. How does a team manage this going into a season other than it is what it is? And is there ways you think, Ed, they can prepare and not have those first game jitters in week two of the season without a game?
Yeah, it's a good point, Jim. You were there yesterday when Mike O'Shea was talking about this. It's not anything that this organization has been through in a long time. You know, they're just going to try to get through tomorrow night's game. They have to declare their roster Saturday night. And then you're right. Then when everybody else is playing, you're kind of standing around wondering what to do. I think they'll go through a regular routine, practice as per usual. There'll be some days off in there. You know, it does seem like a disadvantage. The silver lining to it, if you want to flip it the other way, is that you've got a player like Maurice Leggett who hasn't played yet because he's been hurt in training camp. Maybe you can get him healthy. Some of the other guys that might get nicked up or the guys that have bumps and bruises, you'd like to hope that by July 1, when they play in Saskatchewan, that they're 100% or close to 100%. So that's the way to spin all this thing. But I'm sure, like everybody else, you'd like to get going instead of having an extended training camp. What it might end up meaning is that the big scrap we saw, a couple scraps we saw on Tuesday, we might see some more of that in that bye week and week leading up to the first game because you've got guys that are just antsy to play.
Not sure what he got for a signing bonus, but now we know that Vince Young suffered a torn hamstring, out 4 to 6 weeks. And it'll be a real good indication of how serious Chris Jones is about him as a possibility. If they keep him, you know Chris Jones is pretty serious. But do you expect for them to move on from him, Ed?
Yeah, I would, Troy. I mean, let's face it, it's not like he was lighting it up in camp. That's at least all the reports we were getting is that there'd be days when he'd look like the Vince Young from the NFL and his Texas days, and then there's a lot of other days where they were saying he was the third or fourth best quarterback. And I think it's pretty clear that Kevin Glenn's their starter. And what I saw Saturday night from Brandon Bridge was really impressive. I mean, forget the fact that he's Canadian. He looked great, and I would be very comfortable going to having him as number two on my depth chart. They really like this Marquise Williams, who they brought in. Later in camp, he broke some of Darian Durant's records at North Carolina. Brian Bennett, the former Bomber, didn't look very good. But if I were the Riders, and clearly I'm not, but if I were them, I would get rid of Vince Young. You can't wait 6 weeks for a guy that's 34 years old and was maybe third or fourth best on your depth chart. I think it's a perfect parachute for him to get out of this and go back to Texas, go back to his job. I think he worked for the Longhorns. Television network, so it's not a graceful exit, but he could certainly say, "Hey, look, I'm dinged up. I'm 34. I think I had my shot. I'm out."
Good stuff, Ed. We appreciate your time as always. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy your day.
Appreciate it, boys. Have a good day.
Thanks so much, Ed. Take care.
Take care.
BlueBombers.com is where you can read Ed Tate's fine work.
We'll say this about Vince Young at 34, and you know the vast majority of guys that come up from the NFL. Sort of take the CFL lightheartedly, don't understand how competitive is up here. But when he did arrive in Canada, it sure didn't look like, I know we saw some video of him training, but it didn't look like he applied himself to the extent that you would hope in the gym prior to arriving.
Calling him pudgy? Toth-like?
I'd go more with the first. Like, he just did look like he applied himself to the degree necessary to make dang sure that you're in wicked shape coming into camp.
I understand the fever, the passion to want to play. And when it's gone, it's gone. And you want to play as long as you can. At 34 years old, I just didn't understand what the end game here was. And if it would, because the end game to me, even best case scenario, was a couple more years maybe of starting football in the Canadian Football League. I did not see this as an avenue. Like, what do you
say he comes
in, backs up, there's an injury, plays eight games. Mm-hmm. It's not enough for me, in my mind, to get him back to the NFL. So then he comes into next year's CFL season. Say he lights it up. He's now 35, 36 years old. Even if he puts up massive numbers, which I didn't...
There's zero chance of him going back to the NFL.
Yeah, I didn't understand what the end game
is. Just wanted to play, man.
That's just it, eh?
Absolutely.
Just wanted to play again.
Yeah.
I guess. TSN 1290 is proud to support the Walk for ALS Saturday, June 17th at Assiniboine Park. The Walk for ALS is the largest volunteer-led fundraiser for the ALS across the country. Funds received to support Canadians living with ALS and investing in research to make ALS a treatable, not terminal, disease. To learn more or to register, visit walkforals.ca. More of The Big Show coming up on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor for MTS Super Spike July 21st and 22nd at the Maple Grove Rugby Park at the south end of our city. Registration is now open and event tickets for non-participants are on sale now. Taking the stage this year is multi-award winning Sam Roberts Band, and all the proceeds from this event will be supporting Kidsport and the True North Youth Foundation. More information is online at tsn1290.ca, and if you'd like to go, we'd like to get you there. 780-1290. 780-1290 for a pair of tickets to this summer's Super Spike. Always one of the best weekends of the summer, July 21st and 22nd. 12th caller through, 780-1290. Good tunes today on the show.
Seeing an interesting piece here where the Thai Cats are embracing yoga as part of their training here. A lot of different sports teams, hockey, football, soccer, everybody is jumping on the whole yoga complement to your workout for the core and everything else and the flexibility and stuff. Have you ever tried yoga?
I have, yes.
It is vicious, huh?
It is vicious.
Yeah.
I am, but it's great because I'm not one of those, like I'm a tall guy, mm-hmm. but I have issues with hamstrings and quads and all that. It is very good for me, but it is very hard.
I've been to a couple they were training sessions for future yoga instructors, and they would at one of the places in the city, and they'll get me to pose or attempt to pose, and then they basically laugh at how pathetic I am at posing yoga wise. But they just want to get an understanding of, you know, Joe Blow,
yeah,
athlete guy trying to do something athletic as a yoga pose, and why, and they talk about why I can't do things or why I can do things and why and how I struggle and how they can appeal to people in trying to help them to be able to become strong enough or flexible enough to do it. It's such a neat thing to
what do they say the reason is?
A lot of it's like body type and training that I do specifically for in the past football and now for my general training functionally for soccer and hockey and stuff, that stuff that's not yoga related, right? Like I'm just not, you know, some of the stuff, it's just neat how I don't have the flexibility to even try, like, to get into a pose and stuff like that. And plus my age, of course, at this point in time. But it's just really neat. It's a fantastic way to complement anything that you're doing athletically.
When I do it, I don't want any mirrors around. I don't want to know. Because in your head, you're doing a great downward dog or you're doing something else.
Yeah.
But in reality...
yeah.
You probably look like you fell over a ledge or something. So
yeah.
That's interesting. I wonder if Jeff Reinbold had anything to do with him.
I don't know. I know he's like, but you say that with a certain thing to him being on the sort of the outside as far as thinking of stuff. But like, I think even the Bombers, like everybody, I know hockey teams doing the same sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
And soccer, like everybody's using it now.
Yeah, especially for aches and pains and everything else and stretching wise. Who's our winner of the Super Spike tickets?
Lindsay Mazurkiewicz.
Congratulations, Lindsay. Who's our winner of the Bomber preseason game tomorrow?
It's Tony.
Tony, congratulations. We appreciate you listening and hope you both enjoy those events. We'll take a break here, talk more hockey, more expansion draft. Gus Katsaros joins the Big Show next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is excited to support Canada 150 at the Forks. Saturday, July the 1st, visitors will experience tons of free family-friendly programming at five stages around the Forks. Experience a powwow and Indigenous storytelling at the Odina Celebration Circle. And, of course, a stunning fireworks spectacle to cap things off at 11 p.m. For a complete lineup of over 50 acts and more, visit theforks.com or TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Boss Pizza fan line open at 9 o'clock. Lots to get to regarding the expansion draft. Yasiel Puig. Should athletes be allowed to give it back to fans who give it to them? And all sorts of interesting things. We'll open on the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock. We're going to continue the hockey talk, and we like to talk hockey with our good friend Gus Katsaros from McKeensHockey.com. Hello, Gus.
How you doing? Thanks for having me back.
Very well. Always a pleasure having you on. And the parade is today. How unlikely, when you look at the Corsi numbers, was this Penguins victory?
Well, it's one of those crazy things that, it you know, beyond any type of statistical foundation, it's one of those things where you expected them to fail just because of the sheer amount of talent that was in and out of the lineup. Nola Tang on the defense, change up the defense. You know, their quick strike team, and when you look at the talent that they were able to put up out front, I mean, the sheer level of offensive firepower seems to compensate for some of the things that don't happen, like randomly in a playoff series. Playoff series are difficult things to gauge from a statistical standpoint, simply because there's not a lot of sample size to derive results from. And randomness just throws results askew pretty easily. So this is what we're seeing in the Penguins here. We're seeing extreme results with not necessarily the best foundation from a statistical perspective.
How awesome is it? How much you got to tip your hat to a guy like David Poile, where you've got that top four of the blue line for the Preds going forward? Roman Josi, $4 million for the next 3 years. Ekholm, 3.75 for the next 5 years, and Ryan Ellis, 2 years tied up with 2.5. Like, how fantastic is that?
Well, they did great in terms of the way that they acquired these assets, and they developed them in-house as well. And at the same time, they've kind of bought into this team concept, and they're all on really decent contracts. It kind of gives them the ability to add a guy like P.K. Subban and his exorbitant, well, I shouldn't say exorbitant, but higher value salary, and that complements just an already good foundational crew. It's not so much just how much money they're making and their contract value, the way that it fits into their defensive structure, but these are prime defensemen. It's hard to distinguish at points who would be easier to play against in terms of pairings. You put Ekholm with anybody and they become better. You add Josi to another player and they have a more mobile foundation in which to build their play sets. There's just so much variety and so much to build on from that top four. It's incredible that they actually have them on one club rather than the contract value that they add on top of their specific asset value.
Dion Phaneuf isn't going to waive his no-move clause. He will be a part of Ottawa going further. How much does that, you know, not only affect them with him in the lineup, Gus, but maybe who they could potentially lose on the blue line?
Well, I guess players negotiate their contracts on good faith, so there's a reason why he got a no-movement clause. Ottawa understood that when they acquired him, and, I mean, they're going to try their luck and they're going to ask if he could waive, and then it's ultimately his decision. So, from Ottawa's perspective, I don't think that Phaneuf was too bad in terms of his own performance in the playoffs, if you isolate that. Obviously, there's warts, and he's kind of into the better half and at least the second half of his career. But I think that he offers a little bit of stability. At the same time, what they're going to end up losing is a player like Mark Muthot or Cody Ceci. They both bring distinct skill sets. Cody Ceci may be a bit more mobile, but hasn't really panned out in terms of the hitting his peak in terms of offensive potential. And the things that he was doing in junior, bringing them to the NHL level, Mark Muthot is a good, solid rock that he's able to allow a roving defenseman to be able to kind of go and make plays, be a bit more risky and creative. Erik Karlsson is the obvious thought here, but any other defenseman paired with him also has that type of opportunity. So I think Phaneuf just kind of gives him a little bit of stability on the second pairing, perhaps something if upon injury issues, he can kind of step into a first pairing role here and there. But I think that he just doesn't, it's not, I don't think that he offers him any type of any value other than like an average defenseman, an average second pairing guy.
Gus, how surprised are you when you hear an individual like the new coach of the Florida Panthers, Bob Bugner, come out at 46 years old and speak in such, I don't know, negative, but certainly not very warming way about analytics and the way in which they can be utilized?
Well, you see, from a coaching perspective, I can understand two things here. One, first, he doesn't necessarily have to be entirely truthful with what he thinks of analytics. He may not necessarily know exactly what to expect from Florida's side at this point. So perhaps the reports, the insight, the things that he may be getting from them may end up being more beneficial to him and his team moving forward. And he's not yet up to speed as to what type of data may be available. At the same time, he's a seasoned coach with his own philosophies and his own methods and his own way of communication. A lot of the things that we've discovered over analytics is, you know, sometimes I think it's a little bit more from the fans' perspective rather than the coaching perspective. Coaches in particular, even over general managers. General managers can fall in love with certain players, whether coaches, they're utilizing all their assets at any given moment. So they kind of know a little bit more about in-game theory, and they recognize certain tells that perhaps the numbers may show, but the coach may understand from just simple views. So his gut feel may be similar enough to what the analytics, or at least the research, is telling him that he may either dismiss it all, or he's not yet prepared to what type of inputs he's ready to get to perhaps even change some of his own basic philosophies. So it's surprising to kind of hear what he said. I'm not surprised to, based on him just being a coach and understanding the game from his perspective. And I think that it became just more fodder for an online Twitter conversations and things like that, rather than the impact that I think it'll have from Florida's perspective.
Gus Katsaros from McKeen'sHockey.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Cats with a K, Hockey, at Cats Hockey. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290, 39 minutes past the hour. We're talking hockey with Gus. How intriguing is this expansion draft and these lists coming out this weekend to you, and how the rest of this week will play out? And you know, just how it plays into what the philosophy of Vegas will want to do.
Oh, it's going to be incredible. We're already seeing little reports, apparently, from a deal between them and Anaheim. I'm really excited to see kind of what happens. Not necessarily just because of what Vegas is going to do or the expansion draft itself, but I think that some teams are ready to make some fundamental changes. And that in itself, leading up to the NHL draft, I think is more exciting to me than what the expansion draft will probably end up, or the expansion draft and all the peripheral stuff that ends up from that coming out to light. I think that we're expecting and waiting for some kind of movement. Everybody's waiting for that first trade and something to drop, and then the expectation, I guess, would be some kind of a domino effect. Okay, this team did this, and then another team has to kind of keep up. And I think the expectation, personally, from my end, is more so leading specifically up to the draft and seeing what teams are thinking of prior to making those selections that can impact their future. There's lots of questions surrounding a multitude of teams. There's tons of players that I'm sure that other teams have coveted that may be available at this point. I think that next week is going to be just incredible.
The Swiss Connor McDavid Some are tagging Nico Hischier with Gus. Do you think that's appropriate?
You know, I would be hesitant to offer generational talent to just a first overall pick or a potential first overall pick. Yeah, he's talented. Yes, he has multi-dimensions, and we can go on, and we can spew exactly all the goodness that is Nico Hischier. But Connor McDavid is a very special player. There was a point in time where there was chatter about him already usurping Sidney Crosby as being the best in the world. I mean, that's not something that you want to be compared to as you're just entering the league and setting an expectation of being some type of a generational player. He could become a fantastic player. He could become a superstar. But Connor McDavid is something very, very special, and I think it's unfair to heap the type of expectation on Hischier that it was probably heaped on McDavid.
And right before we let you go, Gus, we talked earlier this week about the legacy of Sidney Crosby, and more specifically to the Penguins organization. It's eerily similar, the playing careers of Mario Lemieux and Sidney Crosby in the organization. I think, obviously, with what Lemieux's done to save the organization and as an owner and everything else, it speaks more for that. But as players, where does Crosby sit compared to Lemieux as the most impactful player this organization has ever had, given their careers are so similar?
Well, I think the answer to that one is the impact that the injuries had on Mario Lemieux. I mean, Crosby's had his concussions and some back issues, and there's been things along the way. But Lemieux had some devastating injuries and sickness that he had to overcome in order to become the player that he was. And so to me, while Sidney Crosby's accomplishments, and they're fantastic, we can roll a big roll on everything he's done so far, I think it's unfair to do a direct comparison simply because of the fact that Mario Lemieux was not given the same type of playing time. He retired, he came back. There were other off-ice things that affected what Mario Lemieux's legacy potentially could have been. So, I mean, from a simple roll call, you can say that Crosby's probably done more, contributed more, achieved more. But from an on-par perspective, they probably had very similar impact to their clubs at a very different point in time, under very different circumstances. Sidney Crosby came in as the Penguins were kind of floundering and brought them to prominence again. So they both had a very distinct impact that I think really helped this club to be where they are right now.
Great stuff. As always, Gus, we appreciate your time and enjoy the excitement that's about to unfold this week and next.
Thank you very much. Same to you guys.
Thanks so much, Gus.
Gus Katsaros, once again, from McKeensHockey.com. We'll tee up the Boston Pizza fan line for you next. But before we go, TSN 1290 and Alter Ego Sports want to help make this summer off the chain. Visit TSN1290.ca and enter to win a 2017 Cannondale Quick 8 bike valued at over $500. We'll be giving away a new bike daily during Bike Week, June 19th to the 23rd. And for more details and enter now, visit TSN1290.ca. Boston Pizza fan line, open at 9. We'll tee it up next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie. We have $10,000 in cash prizes to award to select selfie takers across Manitoba. You could be one of the recipients. To enter, take a really good selfie at some point during the summer. Post it before Thursday, August 31st, to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram with the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. And the prizes that you could win are immense. Selfie of the Summer presented by Robertson College is worth $5,000. The $1,000 prize selfies include Best Animal Selfie presented by Assiniboia Park Zoo, Best Food and Drink Selfie presented by Booster Juice, Best Hair Selfie presented by Aura Hair Group, Best Outdoor Selfie presented by Lacoste Garden Center, and Best Smile Selfie presented by Toddlers to Teens. Our favorite picks in each of these categories will be selected and revealed Tuesday, September 5th. Keep your phone charged and be ready to capture the best of the summer of 2017 and all it has to offer. For more information, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on the Big Show, TSN 1290. The Boston Pizza fan line will be open at 9 a.m., so 10 minutes from right now, and we welcome you to take part. You can also text us, text 129090 with standard message rates applying, and you can weigh in on the conversations that include Yasiel Puig, double bird after a home run to the fans in Cleveland right behind home plate. And it reminded me of Joey Votto a couple weeks ago on the on-deck circle and a fan filming him and saying, "Hey, Votto, I remember when you used to be good." And he replied, "I remember when you used to be skinny." And then they got into it and exchanged, and Votto ended it with, "See, the problem here is I have everything to lose and you have nothing to lose. No matter what I say as you're filming this, you know, I'm going to get in trouble and you're not." And then the Puig with the double bird. Matt Barnes in the NBA Finals got into it with a courtside fan and he got tossed. Just interesting of what is allowed and what's not allowed if you are an athlete. And Puig will get fined, and he wasn't too concerned about it after the game.
Yeah, and you probably don't get too concerned about getting fined for the feeling. Maybe you just felt it was, you got to decide, right, as a player, if it's worth it or not. I don't think the Votto thing and Puig thing are even related. Although, I suppose the point that you're making there is a direction both those guys are headed in communicating with or engaging the fans that are beaking away at you. I love the way Votto did that. There's plenty of that, have seen plenty of that, and taken part in plenty of that. And I think as long as you can keep it decent on your side, regardless of what's coming at you, that can be a lot of fun. That can add to the experience for game day for all the fans who are in earshot of that. So long as you conduct yourself and pull the reins back in wanting to unleash with any level of vulgarity. The Puig thing, as good as it probably felt for him to do the old double salute after the home run, getting beaked before and all the rest of it, he himself says that he just can't stoop to that level. You can't get suckered in, right? That's exactly what they want to see. They want to get you to react and respond. Even though you go hit a dinger like that, you got to keep it up and above them at a certain level. And it doesn't matter if you're at the ballpark, rink, field, whatever it is you're doing and you're getting beaked. The same thing exists when you're out at the nightclub and liquid courage kicks in and some clown comes up to you at 12:30 that night and starts beaking away to you, right? You just cannot engage ever.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Puig there, blow a kiss, right?
Like, yes, like, absolutely.
Just bring it down just a little bit, right? Like, yeah. I have no problem engaging the fans in that matter, especially if they're giving it to you all game long. But I mean,
and blowing a kiss is way better because it makes them that much more angry. Yeah. If you do the double,
you don't give the satisfaction.
They've struck gold. If you blow a kiss, then they're going to get that much more angry. Yeah.
And I think Joey Votto, that sentence from him, basically, if you're an athlete and you haven't heard that before, that's it. I have everything to lose. You essentially have nothing.
Yep.
And you can't get suckered into that.
And I understand all that. And I, 99.9% of the time, side with fans to boo, chirp, do whatever, they buy a ticket. But is there not a point where a guy should be able to turn and, you know, give back just as good as he's getting as an athlete, or is that just no?
Well, we had some fun with that earlier this morning where at some point in time, natural law kicks in, right? Where you say something that is unacceptable. Maybe it's personal, maybe it's family related, maybe it's racial, something like that. And in our natural states as human beings, you would love to take that into your own hands and maybe jaw jack somebody or whatever, but you just can't do it. Like you can't engage. There is a line that you just can't cross as an athlete, because as Votto's touching on, you truly do have everything to lose in taking it that far. So you got to be super smart about it, and you just basically got to. It's a part of the job. When you're talking playing pro sports or high-level sports or being a public figure, even outside of the sports world, but just being a public figure, that absolutely is a part of the gig. And you've got to understand it as the athlete, and your circle around you, your friends, your family, they have to understand it as well.
Like Blake Wheeler this year apologized on Twitter for, I think he was just cursing. Yeah. I don't know if he cursed at somebody or not, but said, "I love all Jets fans. I apologize for what I said," or I'm not sure the details. But anyways, the question is there, is it off 100% for athletes to give back, or do you believe an athlete, if he's taken some heat or some grief from some fans, to be able to return the favor, even though he's going to get fined? On the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290, to the expansion draft now. What do you have the Jets doing, and whom do you protect?
I think we're going to see some real good imagination here by the GMs, including here in Winnipeg. I refuse to think it's simply going to be four, or the 8-1 with 4D, four forwards, and that's it, cut and dried. I think they're going to go out of their way to go 7-3-1, and therefore exposing Kopp and Dano, protecting, I think, Trouba, Myers, Byfuglien. You get Toby to waive his no-move clause, and then still wanting Toby on the left side, whether you bring in someone for the top four or not, still wanting him to complement your third pairing if possible, you still want him here. So you send something to sweet-talk George a little bit, and you send a pick, whatever it's going to take, so that they don't touch Toby, and ultimately you end up with them. And if even if that does fail and you've got to expose a Tyler Myers, you contact George and you make a deal so that you go 7-3-1, you send some picks, prospects, whatever it's going to take, so that they don't touch that fourth D-man. That's the way I think it plays out.
Yeah, I would agree with most of that, the 7-3-1 route. And it's important to know, too, that if you leave – If Enstrom's willing to waive and you leave him exposed, there's still a chance he returns to the Jets after the draft. Mm-hmm. Like it's no guarantee that Vegas takes him, because if it's between Marco Dano, which a lot of people think that might be the route the Jets are going because of that 1 year contract, if it's Dano or Enstrom, I mean it's not set in stone, because you could certainly make a case for George McPhee to take a young 22-year-old forward who could potentially have some untapped offensive potential.
What do you do if you're the Jets concerning the expansion draft, and whom do you protect? And also, do athletes have the right to give it back to some fans? That and much more, including Rory McGregor's comments prior to the U.S. Rory McIlroy's comments prior to the U.S. Open. Boss Pete's fan line's open, 780-1290 next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present Manitobaville. We're awarding $25,000 to put towards a project that enhances one special Manitoba community. To enter, rally friends and family in your community to make a video about your hometown. Tell us how $25,000 can make it an even better place to live. Is there something your community needs? An existing project that requires more money, and can it enhance tourism and the lives of people who stay there? Record a video telling us about how your hometown would spend the $25,000 and send it to us at tsn1290.ca before noon on Friday, July the 14th. 10 finalists will be revealed on Monday, July 24th, and the public will vote for a winner to receive the $25,000. Manitobaville, make your hometown even prouder. Presented by Robertson College and proudly supported by Chicken Chef, Star Ready to Move Homes, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and Merritt Contractors. For more info on official rules and regulations, visit tsn1290.ca. On the Big Show, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Do athletes have a right to give it back to fans who give it to them? And what do you do if you're the Winnipeg Jets with the expansion draft? Which way do you go, and whom do you protect on your list? 780-1290 or text us at 1290-90. Gary, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
Just want to make a comment about those athletes giving it back. I think they should have every right, because being a longtime season ticket holder of the Bombers, and I've been to other cities in Canada and that for a lot of different sports of all levels, and there's some nasty people out there that take things way too far, and that's just from my own experience. I can't imagine what some of these athletes get, the things that are said to them, and it gets pretty bad. I've been stunned quite a few times over things people say, and I think they should have every right to defend themselves.
And so, like, Yasiel Puig gives the finger to the fans on his way back. He's going to get fined for that. Do you think, you know, I don't think he cares too much, but, should they even be fining him for that? Or is that, like, where do you sit on that?
I, I mean, obviously there's a code in sports, but I don't know. Because me personally, I don't like. You see a lot worse things out there than that, but I don't. It's, I guess it's a touchy area, but I don't think he should get fined for it because I'm sure the things that were said to him were a lot worse than two middle fingers.
My goodness, guys, if you didn't fine him for flipping the bird, then look out for the gong show soon to follow with other athletes making similar type gestures. That would be crazy.
I've actually seen a couple of people at ex-Bomber games, back when you were playing, Troy, too, at the old barn. You've seen everything, and there's people... I've seen people literally tackled and hauled out by security for things they're saying, and that's just saying it. So, yeah, I mean, you guys know it. It can get pretty bad out there.
Yeah.
All right, we appreciate it, Gary. Do you want to weigh in on the expansion draft at all?
I don't know. I think they're probably going to just expose Myers. I think you could do one of those side deals, kind of give him a pick not to take him. But I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens with that.
Good stuff, Gary. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Take care, man.
Text 129090. Standard message rates applying if you want to get in on the conversation. And, of course, the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. I guess it's just, and I'm trying to look at it from all angles. Does a ticket price give you free rein to say certain things?
Well, certain things, yeah, but you have to keep it within certain boundary, no question about it. Even just to stay in the, like Gary was saying, to stay in the stadium, right? There is a line, and the line, I don't know if it can be clearly defined. I don't think there's a whole lot of gray area, but once you get into personal nasty type of attacks or family ugly type attacks or anything racial or sexual orientation-wise, those types of things are unacceptable. So that's where the line would be drawn for sure. And I think it's good when venues and security at those venues act when you hear something like that, right? That's what's unacceptable for sure from a fan perspective.
Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Who's next?
We'll get Ty to hold on, but we'll get Hank here.
Hank, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hi. I've just got two comments I'd like to make.
Sure.
The first being, what did we learn from the Stanley Cup Finals? We do not need four puck-moving defensemen. We need defensive defensemen. Do you think any one of our four starting top four defensemen, other than maybe Trouba, can match up with the starting four of Nashville? I do not think that we need to be so concerned about saving puck-moving defensemen. I think we need to have a shift. We've had this in effect for how many years?
Well, the reason I would say to protect them is because you don't have anybody else right now. So it's not so much for me to, like, what the defensemen bring. To me, it's, like, if you're talking about Toby Enstrom specifically, I don't know who's on that left side other than Josh Morrissey if you lose him. I know you can make a trade, go get him. Compared to Nashville, I mean, I think Jacob Trouba is up there in elite defenseman and the potential for that. I wouldn't sell Josh Morrissey short given what he's done in 1 year. Tyler Myers, I think, is a valuable, very valuable defenseman. I don't think he's on the same, you know, he's no Roman Josi or anything, but he's a physical defensive defenseman.
I don't know. I wouldn't call him physical, but it's an interesting point that you're making, Hank, where you're like puck moving of defenseman. What do people consider that to be? Does that mean a guy along the lines of an Erik Karlsson who'll take the puck and skate it out and enter the opposing zone in that manner? Or is a puck moving defenseman someone in their own defensive zone who can make smart, intelligent passes to get the puck out of their zone, you know, send it to the forwards, and make a smart exit zone type passes? I think I get the point that you're making, but I ultimately a guy like, for instance, Jim saying we're a Jacob Trouba or Josh Morrissey, I think they can be described as puck moving defensemen because they are capable of making very sound decisions with the puck in their own zone to ensure exits. And that's defense. That's a part of playing defense that's equally as important as being sound in your own zone in coverage and all the rest of it, in body position and such, right? Like, you can't I agree with you. I think the point, Hank, that you're making is that you don't need anything overwhelmingly offensive from your defenseman, but you need to be sound and you need to be able to make good, smart decisions once you do get the puck to get it out of your zone.
That is my point.
Yeah.
And I just challenge the idea that the four starting four, or not all of them, because Morrissey doesn't really count. He's an up and coming. He's protected, so we don't have to worry about him. But the other four, Trouba is the only one, in my mind, who fits the category that we need. Do we really have intelligent, high IQ defensemen that can chip the puck out and start an offensive play? The Hail Mary passes, even Nashville tried to do that, but it didn't get them anywhere. Just steady as we go.
See, I do think, though, that Pittsburgh's got pretty good puck-moving guys in Alimata, Trevor Daly, and Justin Schultz. There's three guys for sure. And, you know, when you're looking at the Jets, Morrissey, Trouba for sure, and Myers for sure. And Dustin Byfuglien is a fantastic at good, sound exit passes when he's in the right sort of headspace, right? Once Dustin Byfuglien gets the puck, he's typically pretty darn smart with it for the most part, especially with exit passes. So I don't know that the Jets don't have already what you're sort of asking for or mentioning.
Yeah, and comparing to Nashville, I mean, Nashville, I think, is on a different level. But I get what you're saying. And normally puck-moving defenseman is referenced by points. And you bring up a good point, Hank. What's your other point you wanted to make?
Sorry, Hank's gone.
Oh, sorry, Hank. If you want to weigh in again, give us a call at 780-1290.
I don't think puck-moving defensemen are referenced by points.
Well, like it isn't. I mean, puck moving is such a blanket statement that I think it's thrown out there. It's like, what defenseman can't move the puck?
Well, you know what? Like Mark Stewart. Like if you want,
well, if he can't move the puck,
when you're talking about getting the puck effectively out of your zone with crisp passes. When I think puck moving, that's where I start. Like that's a starting point, right? You have the puck in your zone. Are you able to make and deliver quick, sound passes to get out of your zone?
I feel like most defensemen do, though.
But some we know, some don't.
And that's like the bottom of the barrel, though, right? So to say, we need a puck moving defenseman. That's basically 95% of the defensemen in the NHL.
Yeah, that's why I reference points. Like to me, puck moving defenseman always reference to a guy who could get some assists because he could make some passes and move the puck and get. He had a lot of points because he was getting assists and making some putting points on the board. Yeah, I mean, when you look at Nashville's defense, and to say it didn't get them anywhere, it got them to the Stanley Cup final.
They
relied heavily on that defense to get them to the Stanley Cup final.
And oddly enough, I kind of like Subban more so than the other three, but Subban would do that flip pass up the middle of the ice,
it causes
so much chaos and havoc. Yeah. It's almost impossible for a defenseman to try and handle that play well, because you got to try and play it out of the air with your hand, and if you don't, hope the puck bounces. It's like a Plinko board, right? Like you just kind of hope it bounces in a favorable position towards you.
I'll tell you what, boys, that flip pass has haunted a few over near the Maples Arena, Billy Mozienko. It's tough to do in beer leagues because you got the
short roofs, right?
The roofs are nowhere near what you get in the arenas, right?
When the playoffs ended and they do that montage on Hockey Night in Canada and they showed that Carlson pass again.
Oh, my God.
I forgot about it. Like, I was watching the montage, and I saw it again. I'm like, oh, my. Like, it struck me like it was the first time I saw it again.
It doesn't even – it's still, to me, I have trouble understanding. Like, not just the imagination, like, to be able to think. Like, it's almost Seve Ballesteros where he's, like, he's going to try and do what? But the level of execution to it and the brilliance of it is – beyond comprehension in a lot of ways.
Ty, hang on the Boss Pizza fan line. We'll get to you in 1 second here at 780-1290. But we're talking fans and interaction, and Chris sent me a great tweet. in mini a few years ago for Jets Wild behind our bench, guy in a UND jersey chirping Wheeler all night through the glass. All night. And Wheeler, of course, went to the University of Minnesota. Wheeler scores, turns to them, and says, "Those are the ugliest effing jerseys I ever saw. And that one's for you." And the entire Jets bench erupted. See, and that's what I mean. Like, you can like or dislike foul language. I don't have a problem with it, and that's the kind of stuff that I like. I think athletes should be able to give it a little back.
Well, and that's something. If you're an earshot, like what I was saying, the earshot thing. If you're sitting there and you hear that, that's something you'll never ever forget. And it is interesting because the language today, compared to 20 years ago, for instance, is much more acceptable, right? Like that whole barrier, good or bad, is weathering away.
Take the swearing out of it, Chris. Thank you very much, Chris at UNRUHCH. In mini a few years ago, the Jets Wild bench, guys in UND jersey chirping Wheeler all night through the glass. Wheeler scores, turns to them and says, "Those are the ugliest jerseys I've ever saw, and that one was for you," and the Jets bench erupted. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Ty, you're on the big show. Go ahead.
Boys, I was out. No more Ty Rath. No more you-know-what. I was at the retirement home playing ping pong with Gregory and Cosmic Bob. But like the Godfather 3, every time I think I'm out, you clones pull me back in. I mean, you put a quarter into a payphone and called up and said Tweeg should not be suspended or fined for flipping the bird to fans? Take a step back and give your head a shake. You know what? These guys are playing a kid's game, making millions of dollars. They should be held to a higher standard. Yes, fans are paying those salaries. The ones that put their money, their hard-earned money, on their day jobs every single day to go to the stadium and watch these guys and buy the products they endorse. So you know what? I have no problem, like Votto, giving it back to them in a professional, respectful manner. But when they step over the line, these guys should be fined or suspended. It's about the fans. It's about they can pay for the seats. They can do anything they want. Now, if they get disrespectful, yes, you lose the right as a fan for the seat you paid and should be escorted out in a nice and gentle manner, like most security guards do. But again, let's not go to extremes and not let them get suspended. As for the expansion draft and that's coming up, yes, I would hope that good old Toby basically waived his no trade clause. I like the way the Jets handle it. As for the Senators, I think they put Vanouf in a corner. My God, why would you say that you asked a guy to waive it? And then he comes out publicly and says, "No, I didn't." Boy, that just gives him a bad taste in my mouth. You know what? Keep it quiet. No one needs to know. No more information from them. Anyways, I'm looking forward to it. I hope the Jets, you know, don't escape with only losing Dano or Kopp. Anyways, boys, it's a great pleasure. And back to the retirement home. I think I'm up with ping pong with Gregory.
Ty, right before you go. he went.
Of course he's going to drop the mic.
So
well
like
done.
If they give Puig the bird, and then Puig hits a home run, and he gives him the bird back.
No,
because
dude.
You bought a ticket, you're allowed to flip the bird to a player.
Yeah.
And but, the player's not allowed to flip it back.
That's right.
But I think, like we saw in Philly, that Sixers fan give the double bird to Russell Westbrook, and he got kicked out right away.
Yeah.
So you can do it, but you're probably getting tossed for it.
Yeah, that's where you got to rely on your security and sort of the integrity of the venue. And I love seeing that.
See,
right?
That was hilarious, actually, because of Westbrook's reaction. I mean, I'm a Sixers fan, and when I saw that, I'm like, what is this guy doing that close to him right in his face? But Westbrook's reaction of, look at this guy, like, what is he doing?
See, and I think what's really important there, it's not so much the impact on the athlete in that situation, but if you're a fan flipping the bird at athletes that are nearby, running by, skating by, all these events are family. They appeal to families, and they're selling to families, and you just can't have people screaming obscenities or making those gestures, and then every kid that sees it, the parents are explaining to them that whole – you can't have that.
Thanks to Gary, Hank, and Ty. We'll get to more of your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon and the Boss Pizza Fan Line. They're lined up, 780-1290, text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. If you want to get in on the conversation, Spricoli? Is that you? Jeff Spricoli?
Hey, dudes, how's it going? Long time no talk.
How are you?
Good. Spricoli is usually pretty mellow, but today he's peeved. I think the union for the referees is pretty powerful because these guys have to really answer to no one except maybe their own internal board. They should have a microphone stuck in their face after the game just like the players do and maybe answer a question or two as to how they can affect the outcome of a game by one call or maybe two.
And that's hockey you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or baseball, whatever, you know, they just don't answer to anybody, really.
Yeah, baseball, the umpires have faced the media, but the National Hockey League and I believe the NFL does not allow their officials to speak to the media.
Just imagine if you were, what's that fella's name again in the game? What's the ref's name?
Kevin Pollock.
Kevin Pollock. Like, if you are that man in this situation, like, for Pete's sake, to have to go up to the media, and I don't know how many times you could apologize for a mistake, and you just made a horrible mistake. I think it's good that they don't subject them. There's all kinds of internal keeping each other, you know, on the up and up and all the rest of it as far as measuring how well you're doing your job and all that sort of thing. You really think that it would be helpful at all to subject them to the media or to the public that way?
Hey, Troy, I had to answer for ordering that large pizza to my home class in high school.
That's because you were on both your time and Mr. Hand's time. I don't know about the officials answering, but I do think the league should address it more. I think the league should have to, when asked questions about officiating, should delve into more of how it works,
but even
what
that,
they're doing
like,
to fix it.
Even that, what was there to explain? Right? There was that sort of the rule that I still haven't seen anywhere. But Bob McKenzie came out and said that because it was touched by a secondary player or however he defined it, and I think it was Rule 38.4, I still don't see anywhere where there's a mention if somebody else touches the puck and it goes in and that. But I'll agree that the league should clarify things as much as possible when mistakes are made.
That specific incident, I totally agree with you. That's a human error. That's a mistake. But I would love to know why some officiating at different times of the season is different than everything
boy.
Else and,
even,
and all that stuff.
Dude,
I would love to.
Even the series were officiated so differently, right?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Spricoli. We'll get to more of your calls when we return to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Alter Ego Sports are proud to present the TSN 1290 Street Team. Popping up at Winnipeg's best events all summer long will be at concerts, sporting events, charity events, and more. We'll be bringing our Spin to Win prize wheel to select events and giving you a chance to win great stuff, like tickets to Bruno Mars or a Cannondale Quick 8 bicycle from Alter Ego Sports. Here's where you can find us over the next little bit, the Walk for Alzheimer's. On Tuesday, June the 13th, that was yesterday, we had a great time out there. The Winnipeg Jazz Festival, June 15th to the 25th. The Walk for ALS this Saturday, June the 17th. And Ride, Don't Hide for the Canadian Mental Health Association on Sunday, June the 25th, as well as the University of Winnipeg Westman Golf Tournament, Thursday, June 29th. For more info on these great events and the TSN 1290 Street Team, simply visit tsn1290.ca.
Kevin Schwartz makes a good point here with me on Twitter, and man, I agree 100% with him. I think the larger thing that he's getting at here, and his tweet is, when fans go overboard, it stops becoming family entertainment. I heard numerous times this is an issue with the Bombers at Bomber games. And Kevin, I agree 100% with you, and I think it's the very nature of the sport. You go to a baseball game, and the environment there, I have never once ever, at all the Gold Eyes games I've gone to, ever had to deal with a situation where I felt uncomfortable, anything like that, nothing negative ever, nothing even close to it in that environment. At hockey, nothing really. I've seen things, but nothing that I've been around has it existed. You know, sometimes things get a little bit crazy, potentially at hockey games, certainly. But football, specifically, just by nature of the game, the higher level of violence, everything else involved, seems to draw, like, that's a concern for me at Bomber games. And I distinctly remember going, soon after I was cut for the first time, going to my first game in the stands with the family, and at the end of that thinking, I don't think I can ever bring my kids to another game. We were sitting in the old stadium on the east side. I think it was section U or something like that. Real nice seats. But the amount, just the environment of it and climate of it is like, I can't bring kids to this.
780-1290 if you want to weigh in on the conversation, or text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying on the Big Show. Montgomery, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Yeah, regarding this, that athletes should be held to some kind of higher standard, and I don't know. I don't know if I'm just old school. I mean, I'm also not that old. I remember when I was 10, and I specifically remember John Kruk being interviewed by a reporter, and she asked him about, how do you feel about being a role model to kids when you're chewing tobacco and you're cursing? And he said, lady, I'm not a role model or an athlete. I'm a ball player. I mean, I just don't get it. I grew up watching all types of guys saying all types of things in stadiums. One of my very close friends retired from playing NHL hockey just a few years ago. I mean, these are great guys, but they're also guys that have been in the gym since they were kids. I mean, this is all they know. And as a 10-year-old, I remember when I heard that from John Kruk, I don't remember if I was laughing, but I remember thinking, I don't think kids should be looking up to athletes at all. Like, we should be playing sports for sure, but these are not the role models that people should be looking up to. They're for entertainment. And how people act in a sport is certainly not how people act in their regular day-to-day life. And I grew up watching that. I certainly don't act in my day-to-day life how I acted when I played sports, or how I looked up to athletes when I was a kid, seeing that, thinking that was acceptable behavior sometimes. I don't know. I don't understand it. I don't know if this is just some change in our society where people are becoming a lot more soft and think that this is, that everything needs to be controlled, but this is just, this is nonsense to me. It really is.
Charles Barkley had
Barkley,
that too.
Same thing.
Like,
I'm not a role
model.
Right?
Your role model should be your teacher or your parents.
The fact of the matter is, though, you don't get to pick whether or not you're a role model. I don't make the decision that I'm a role model. The second somebody, you don't need to be an athlete. You can be in your own family, right? As an older brother, older sister, something like that. You are a role model when somebody looks up to you. It's not a decision. It's not up to you. And so, hey, the same, and conducting yourself in a certain manner, the same way for all of us in our places of employment, we need to conduct ourselves in a certain manner that is acceptable to management and our bosses. The exact same thing applies to a professional athlete or a high-level athlete. You don't really get to make that call. And the one thing I'd like to just add a little bit, it's like in baseball, if you go to the ballpark, there's no family zone. And that's why it's so important, and they do this at Bomber games. They create family zones, right? So you get like-minded people to go there, and you can sort of shield yourself from some of the shenanigans where liquid courage and all that sort of stuff comes into play a little bit more, and you can
expose
to your kids,
right? It's also demographics, too. Like, Gold Eyes games are predominantly older crowd. Bomber games are a more party crowd. I go to a Major League Baseball game. I hear some of the most vile things I've ever heard. I was at a Milwaukee Brewers Philadelphia
sounds like
Phillies
the crowd
game.
You're running with, though.
And no, and there was some no offense to the Philly fan, there were some Phillies fans in the next section. Mm-hmm. And we were actually sitting in seats, hustler, that we didn't buy. We were just sitting there for about six innings, and security came and said, well, the actual seat holders are here, so you have to go.
Hustler.
And all the Brewers fans were like, let the Canadians stay, let them stay. And all the Phillies fans in the next section were like, let the effing Canadian fans stay. Like, it was night and day, but it was a Major League Baseball game. It's just...
Well, take that times by 10 at an NFL game, though, right? Like,
oh,
it's still,
yeah.
Even the it's just different. The sports inherently have different sort of cultures around them.
It was really funny, though, now that I think of that story, how the Milwaukee fans were one way and the Philadelphia Philly fans were just total different demo and different comments. Montgomery, thanks for the call. Barry, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Show me the money. All I want to know is what did they make by winning the Stanley Cup per player? And also, when they've played four rounds, when you're in the playoffs, do you get paid every time you win a round? So could you tell me what they got paid, and I'll let you guys go. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you. I'll look that up for you. I do know there's a if you make
– nowhere near what their contracts are, I can assure you that.
And it,
I
would it's like pipe players.
For sure you get paid as you progress in each round.
Yes, and I know when you win the Stanley Cup, you get a certain amount. When you lose the Stanley Cup, you get a certain amount, and it's less. Players Association games are out. The annual payout was doubled to $13 million this season. I'll have to look this up for you, Barry, as we continue with the Boston Pizza fan line, but there is some money being paid out for winning and to the team that lost in the Stanley Cup final. 780-1290. Thanks, Barry. Dave, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead. Hi, Dave. David? No, David. We'll go to Leo. Leo, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've been listening to you guys for a while now. I'm going to comment on the fans giving it back, or the players giving it back to the fans. In the Winnipeg Stadium late in October, November, with Louis Pasaglia teeing up a ball from prime yardage, eh? The whole stadium would be yelling, "Screw you, Lou." Even the babies would be. Okay. And then the second one is Bernie Ruoff being kicked out of Winnipeg for the wrong reasons.
Well, back then, though, that was quite a sin back then, right?
Yes, sir.
Caught with marijuana, yeah.
And then the number
Bob
one...
Bob Cameron, sir. Sorry, Bob Cameron always says he owes his career to drugs. Because Ruoff got booted out because of pot, right? And then Bob came here.
And the third one, or the number one give back to the fans is the Banjo Bowl, sir.
Yes, sir. That's right, huh? Yeah. Yeah, I love the... And that's, to me, that sort of back and forth that I had every single year with the Rough Rider fans was along the lines of the Votto thing, where it's just certain language to be. And I know I pushed the line there, but I think I tiptoed down the line fairly well in that situation. But you just got to be careful of your language and just to keep it on the sort of fun side, right? Like, so yeah, there's a line, there's a gray area, and it's up to the athletes more so than the fans to know where it is and do your darndest to tiptoe down that thin line.
We appreciate the call, Leo, on the Boss Pizza fan line, or text if you want to weigh in, 129090 with standard message rates applying. 780-1290 on the Big Show with Steve. Go ahead, sir.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
I want to touch quickly on the expansion draft, and then if there's time, a little story about heckling.
Sure.
For the expansion draft, I think, Jim, you've hit it on the head. It's not a question of what they want. I think they have to look at it from the perspective of what can we afford to lose. Every team is going to lose something they don't want to lose, and they're going to lose it for nothing. So can the Jets afford to lose a Toby Enstrom? Well, if they have a younger clone in Morrissey, then you can see where that goes. They can't really afford to lose a Tyler Myers because in 3 years, Jacob Trouba may still not be signed with this club, and they're going to have to deal with that. And then they're suddenly down two very big defensemen. Logan Stanley's not ready to come up yet. If they lose an Armia, he's a bottom six forward right now. Can they replace him through free agency? Can they find another Joel Armia-type clone? I don't want to have to lose Joel Armia. I really like him. I think he offers something that maybe he could develop into what Michael Frolik was. But they can't really afford to lose a 6'5 center in Adam Lowry. And can you replace a Matthew Perreault? Well, maybe Nick Batan, moving up to a second-line role, can show more of that offensive flair that he showed in junior. Maybe Jack Roslick develops a little faster than they want to. But I think that's the approach they have to take, which is why I see them going the 4-4-1 route, unless they can figure out something with Enstrom. And I have no indication that he wants to waive it. They haven't talked about it, but you sort of think they would have made some announcement on that. So I think get ready to lose Perreault or Armia. If I could handpick the jet, I'd give away. They can afford to lose Dano. They can afford to lose Kopp and maybe a draft choice or a young prospect in the minors. But we'll survive if we have to say goodbye to Perreault or Armia for nothing at this point.
I agree. I just don't think they have the depth on the left side to lose somebody. But anyways, go ahead. Your point with the fan?
I think it starts with the fans, and you have to show the respect, and I think the security's got to be on top of that. I was at a Goldeyes game once, and the most brilliant bit of heckling I've ever seen, and I still remember the player's name for Sioux City, was Derek Kopats, came up to bat, and two guys in the stands, it just started with two of them, all they did was go, Derek, Derek, and at first it was kind of like the fans were like, okay, what are you trying to do? Well, he strikes out the first time, comes out the second time, they're at it again, and as the ball's crossing the plate, they'd really yell loud, and nothing more than his name, and then he hit a long fly ball to the warning track, caught out, and the fan screams, oh, you're just awful, comes up to the third time, and then four fans. He went 0 for 5 with 4 strikeouts, and by the fifth time up, the entire stadium was on him, and you could tell. It was so in his head, he was just whiffing at balls in the dirt just because it was so uncomfortable. And I thought, now that was a great bit of heckling that didn't cross any lines, and you could see how it affected the player, but it was clean, it was entertaining, and baseball lends itself to that kind of unique atmosphere, because you've got, like, in hockey, it's a fast-moving play. Unless you're on the bench in football, you're out on the field. I don't know how much you're sort of engaging with the fans. But baseball has that slow-den mentality where, okay, I'm at the plate, there's time between pitches, I'm out here on an island all by myself. And I think if the fans can keep it respectful, it can get quite entertaining. And I don't have a problem with the player, in a playful manner, giving it back to the fans who did that. When the Jets fans were chanting to Eric Staal and he put in a couple of goals, if he turned and waved to the fans after the game-winning goal, I would have been like, you know what, we're asking for it, and he showed us up. And that's fine. If you're going to be vulgar or profane, I think you have to account for it. But I think players are human, and they want to let the fans know, hey, I heard you, but yeah, I came out on top.
Great. Yeah, I think I was covering that game. I remember that. I remember that he kept going with I think he had the golden sombrero that day. You're right.
It's a little bit similar to the Nashville Predators and their chants and all the rest of it. And it's unified, and they go after, they point out certain plays or certain players and all the rest of it. A part that I really love is when you're on the sidelines of football, and some of the stadiums are really close, like Hamilton's old Ivor Wynne, the fans were people would spit on us sometimes. That's how close they were, right? And security would take care of it. Or the old Taylor Field or Mosaic Field, they were right there. And when somebody says something really funny directed to a coach or a player and the guys facing the field start laughing, but you can't let the fans see that you're laughing about whatever that was said, but you can see shoulders shaking and all that sort of stuff. Stuff like that is priceless. Those types of exchanges are the best.
See, I can take a lot and I can give a lot. I enjoy the exchange. But if you spat on me,
And Hamilton, like, Hamilton is something, right? I've described that they have got a 3 or 4 block place of downtown that's like the Star Wars bar. And Ivor Wynne back in the day, man, like, there were times it was like just little kids, too, like 5 years old, leaning over the rail, spitting loogies at us. It was just unbelievable.
You like,
where are your parents? Yeah. Like, parents are over top of them spitting as well. Crazy.
Thanks for the call, Steve. We'll get to more of your calls. We have to take a break. But before we do, this is from 2013. There is a $13 million pool for the 2013 playoffs in the National Hockey League. The President's Trophy winning team got $500,000. So you often wonder, what does it mean? Well, that could be what it meant. The first round losers split $2 million, $250,000 goes to each of the 8 teams that lose in the first round. Second round losers split $2 million, which means $500,000 is split between the 4 teams. Third round losers get $2.5 million, so $1.25 million is split between the 2 teams. And the Stanley Cup finalists get $2.25 million, and the Stanley Cup champion gets $3.75 million, meaning on a 25-man roster, if you won the Stanley Cup this year, you're getting a $150,000 bonus. And really, that comes
nowhere
from playoff
near
revenue, I would presume.
Nowhere near the game checks.
Nowhere near the game checks.
Them,
no,
anyway.
That's on top of. So if you were a Pittsburgh Penguin, you get $150,000 this year for winning the Stanley Cup, and it goes down from there. More of your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Leave the back gate unblocked because TSN's coming over on select evenings throughout the summer. TSN 1290 will back up the truck with a portable party for up to 25 people, including catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats, including a burrito bowl hot bar with tortillas so you can make tacos and an abundance of three cheese queso. Beverages, including a sampling of Tall Grass Vodka, Winnipeg's only grain-to-bottle vodka produced by Capital K Distillery. A family pack of fireworks to light up your night, courtesy of Archangel Fireworks. An iGrill 2 digital app connected thermometer for each grand prize winner provided by Lux Barbecue Company. And a hot tub for you to soak in over the course of a week, provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. We'll also have the TSN 1290 crew on site to help serve and set up. Parties will happen Thursday evenings from now until August, including June 29th, July 20th, and August 10th. Enter online at tsn1290.ca. We could be seeing you soon. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with the Boss Pizza fan line on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Adam, you're on the program. Go ahead. Hi, Adam. We lost Adam. Sorry, Adam, try again if you can. 780-1290. Bob, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Jimmy.
Oh. Cosmezo one. Cosmetics. Cosmezenko.
Aha.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Yeah, like you mentioned Billy Mozienko.
Well, sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
How are you, sir?
Hello, Troy and Brennan.
Bobby.
Hello, sir.
Three microscopically small questions. You need an electron microscope to see them. They're so small.
Let's have them.
Hypothetically, if you were Gibby, would you stand Stroman down for a seasoning?
Stroman? No.
No. Joey Bats hitting 233. What do you think his number will be by the end of the season, hypothetically?
258, 267.
Yeah, I was going to say 260.
I'll say 245.
Ooh. Not very. Could we call that mediocre?
Sure.
And the third one is, do you think people should be ultimately grateful to it to attend a live sporting event, no matter what the language?
If they paid for it, they I don't think they have to be grateful. If they won tickets from TSN 1290, be grateful. We're happy to help you.
Yeah, they're such wonderful things. They're more than just.
But I like, Bobby, I like the point maybe that you're getting at there where, you know, if you're bringing a young one, like a child or a kid to a game, a sports game, I think there's plenty of lessons that you can pass down to your child, you know, to be grateful of the opportunity to go and the environment and watching the sport that they likely love, all those sorts of things. So I dig what you're getting at there.
Yeah, because ultimately, would you agree, Troy, it mirrors society?
Absolutely, I agree with that, man. Yeah.
Well, it's always a pleasure, fellas.
Pleasure is ours, Bob.
Take care, man.
Keep on keeping on, man. That is the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. And, of course, we thank you for weighing in with your thoughts and on text at texting 1290-90. Standard message rates may apply, but that's one of the new ways you can get a hold of us, and we always appreciate the feedback and the weighing in, of course. Blue Jays baseball tonight, the Jays and the Rays, 6 o'clock on TSN 1290. Rick Ralph is up next with the Don Vito Roundtable at 11 a.m. And then Hustler is back from a little downtime, rest and relaxation. He'll have the warm-up, the Gondola Pizza warm-up at 2, and then the afternoon ride with Mr. Paul Edmonds sitting in with him at 3 o'clock. We'll do this all again and have more time on the Boss Pizza Fan Line for your thoughts on what the Jets should do concerning the expansion draft and who they will protect. We'll do it again on the Boss Pizza Fan Line and much more to come. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening. And the Big Show on TSN 1290 will be back tomorrow morning at 6.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.